But switchblades are not.
But you can't have a switchblade.
Some places take it even further. Like in New York, if you have a lock blade, but it's loosened enough on the spring that you can kind of just flip it open by flipping your wrist, that's also illegal.
You could hurt somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hurt somebody with any knife.
You could hurt somebody with lots of objects that aren't weapons.
Yeah, just look at MacGyver.
MacGyver doesn't hurt people.
Nobody
MacGyver's
could.
A pacifist.
You know he used a gun in the first season?
Yeah, I know. All right, my mom loved that show. She watched a lot of it.
Kind of like I saw a video recently that tracked every time that Batman killed somebody in the comics and every single movie.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every live-action Batman has killed at least one person.
Yeah.
By inaction or by... So like Two-Face in Batman and Robin, right? Was that Batman and Robin or was that Batman?
Two-Face was Batman Returns.
Sure.
Which is a... that was the Val Kilmer one, and I think he just like murders some random person or whatever. But yeah, he does drop Two-Face too.
When he
yeah.
throws the coins, yeah, Two-Face yeah. drops. Does that count as a kill by Batman?
It might. I don't remember.
Like, I know. Well,
for example, in Batman Returns, when he puts dynamite down somebody's pants and throws them off a cliff.
Sure, that's distinct death.
That one counts.
Yes.
The Adam West one's a little goofier, but there are some dehydrated and then reconstituted goons. Like, they dehydrate them into powder, and then Batman adds water to them, and they turn back into being goons. And so when he punches them, because they're unstable, they explode. They're vaporized.
Yeah. It's a conversation for the podcast.
Because the thing is, they do that to the UN also. They dehydrate all the members of the UN, and then when Batman reconstitutes them, the powder had gotten mixed up, so now they speak the wrong languages, and it's wacky.
Travis, if you want to come this way a little bit.
The 1960s Batman movie was amazing.
It is pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, this is the original Batman comic strip for like the first year. He used Gatling guns and shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He had a rope hanging off of a helicopter that just strangled a dude, and then he flew around with the corpse dangling from underneath it.
Yeah.
Like, Batman didn't mess around.
So I have a pop culture reference question.
Hmm.
I can tell what everything on the microphone stands and table is, except that weird naked Fraggle. What is going on?
The orange thing?
The orange thing. What is that supposed to be?
It's a little dinosaur.
Oh, it's just
like
a
little T-Rex, like a baby toy.
Okay. Nice. Since everything else was from a recognizable property, but I couldn't tell what that was.
I got Shang Tsung's autographed.
Oh.
That's over here. Oh. There's a Brock Samson in the way.
That's exciting.
All right. So I was kind of asked what we were doing for this podcast. Basically, we'll probably go through our introductions, announcements, probably announce like Adepticon and some Kickstarter that's happening right now. I don't know.
I don't know if Kickstarter's happening right
now. Is it The Wizard?
The Wizard?
Yeah, it's a little RPG, little zine, like a $5. No, is that not the Kickstarter?
No.
Okay, sorry.
I'm hoping the Oz's audio goes out live because I haven't tested that part of it. Everything else has been... He's coming through on the actual chat here, but going out live, that would be hilarious.
I cannot wait to have half a conversation and us completely just not.
Well, I mean, this is a beat with it.
Do you guys have some sort of chat where people could tell you that they can't hear me?
Oh, yeah, yes. But what would we do if they said that? Like, we would have no solution to that. It would just be like, cool, now we know.
No, this creates a whole new genre of podcast where we have imaginary conversations with people.
With real people, though. Yeah.
Travis
we can
just
claim
repeat...
he said anything.
Travis can just repeat everything I say.
Sure. I am the quasi Privateer Press employee at the table.
The problem is that Travis would honestly repeat what you said instead of just making up whatever we wanted to be official and claiming you had said it.
Yeah.
Not that we'd do that.
Never.
Never.
I would do that.
This is actually, I mean, the quality, at least for the voice spikes that's happening over on the audio chat, looks pretty solid. So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and start the intro.
All right.
I'm glad that Dan.
Which I have a nice new Crippled System / Warcaster intro.
Ooh.
I like that the weapons are symmetrical because I was wondering about left versus right.
I was too.
Yeah.
We can talk about that.
Oh, and
yeah, we could.
You could start thinking about this now, Oz, about a recommendation at the end. We usually just like recommend some type of
anything.
Anything.
Yeah, sure.
Are we going to cut the back Warcaster as the recommendation straight out of the gate?
I mean, it's the whole episode is a recommendation.
It's an advertisement,
for Warcaster.
Yeah.
So Oz hasn't been on. We haven't had a repeat yet, have we? Because we had Hungerford, Pagani, Faye, and Oz.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's been on twice.
Hmm.
I've never been even invited before. I'm sad.
You are open invite.
Yeah.
You were invited to my other podcast that ceased to exist one day.
I know you invited me to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, when we had Hungerford and Pagani on, there was literally a DDoS for Twitch, so all of Twitch was down for the entire cast.
Our audience thought we were just incompetent, which we are.
Well, Hungerford and Pagani thought we were too.
Hey, and welcome to Crippled System, episode 306.
Woo!
My name is Andy.
I'm Travis.
I'm Nathan.
And I'm Dave.
And with us is special guest.
Oh, yeah, we should do that.
Yeah. Are you pointing at your laptop to cue me to talk? Is that what you're doing right now?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do.
That's what I...
Why don't you point at the camera that's pointing at you instead of the laptop?
We'll point at the TV that is you. With us is special guest.
Sure. I apologize for my camera quality. If you could see me behind Travis's head as a glowing blob, it's really awesome.
What he meant to say is, hello, my name's Oz.
Yeah, but I would never do that.
I also like that there's a cursor above your head.
So, So I can't say that he's my boss at Privateer Press because he's not.
Nope.
I'm not going to pull the Will Pagani on this one.
No.
That was amusing when he still introduced you exactly that way at the Gen Con stream.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is our special Warcaster Neo Mechanica episode with, as we see, special guest Oz, who's from Privateer Press, and will talk to us about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also special guest Travis Marg, who's looking sad, but he stole my microphone, so screw you. Yeah.
Yeah. Recurring
I told Travis before the start of the podcast, though, that the red is you.
Yeah, uh-huh. I know. I'm well aware that he did it on purpose and that you told him to.
Uh-huh.
No, I didn't tell him to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I sat down and went. Before I sat down, I went, Andy, which microphone's Nathan? He says the red one. I know where I'm sitting.
Fair.
Andy had no part of it.
I just wanted my nuggies. That's all I wanted.
So first things first, before we get into the Neo Mechanica talk, announcements.
Announcements.
Adepticon continues to be in the near future.
It has not been called off due to coronavirus.
It has not been called off due to coronavirus. Yep. It's 2 weeks away now. Like it's real close. It's so looking forward to seeing all of you soon.
March 25th through 29th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be 20 days. Less than 20 days.
Yeah, like 50 days.
2.5 weeks.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep, and we will all be there and we hope to see a lot of people.
Yeah.
I will be there too.
ATC, of course, will be happening there. It's closed now, right? Or is there still
registration?
Yeah, registration
is closed.
So,
however, if some we couldn't do ATC that way. If any other person wants to come to any other events that's not ATC
and isn't full,
they could
register
on
site. Yeah, on site. We couldn't do that with ATC because when is list lock?
The 13th.
Next Friday.
Theoretically, because there's two spots available because we did have a team that wasn't able to come. Theoretically, from now to the 12th, you could contact Travis or I directly.
Yes.
We can still get you in. You would just then have to register on site once you're there, but you need to register with us before list lock so that we can get the lists.
We could also
You can make
it
happen.
Get them in.
But either way, we can finagle that a little bit. So you have until the 12th, which is this
Thursday.
We want to try to make sure that they have lists in by 13th, even if they're a latecomer for the
registration. Lists are due this 13th, so if you register on Thursday, you have 24 hours to turn in your list. But the point is, there's still time. We got room for two extra teams because of a drop. Anything else coming? So there's an April 4th Madison event that's going to be happening. Somebody's going to run it.
We're going to have a cage fight to figure out who runs it because there's like been one person who normally runs the event says, I can't run it. Maybe somebody else can. And then like five people joined up and they're like, we're going to have an elimination chamber to find out who gets to run this event.
Well, I withdraw my offer to run it and my offer to play in it. I'm not going.
What?
Because I forgot that April 4th I'm already booked. Maybe I could not go to the thing I'm booked to and just make Raylene go alone. But on the other hand, she'd probably murder me.
Is it a wedding or a funeral?
No, she signed us up to be foster fosterers for like orphaned baby raccoons and possums and stuff.
What?
And so we have to go on April 4th to finalize the registration and find out all the equipment and stuff like that that we would need.
What?
But yeah, then my house would just have a room full of baby raccoons and possums and stuff, and that's super awesome.
We've got you've got lots of extra rooms. Just don't forget about them.
I can't run the event on April 4th as you'll well. You need to go. No,
we're making sure you're not actually seeing raccoons and
well, there might be some there, like to say, here's a baby, little baby. I don't know. I cannot guarantee.
Can you confirm before April 4th?
I will look into it. I will look into it. But I do know that at work every Friday, like on our social media internet thing, we post, it's called Fur Baby Fridays, and people post pictures of their dogs and cats and stuff like that. And I will win that son of a gun for the rest of my career if I just have a room full of baby possums and raccoons
can
at home.
Can you get some baby skunks?
Probably.
Because they're adorable, too.
I'll find a everything skunk babies. Mom and kill her, and then I'll foster the babies. That's how it works, right?
That's how you get
you just go out in the wild and just kill an adult and take the babies and go, thank God I saved them. I probably shouldn't say that before applying to be that person.
No, I'm familiar with this. My ex-wife was a wildlife rehabilitator, so we had all sorts of weird animals.
But how often did you just murder a grown animal and steal its children?
I'm not aware of her doing it, but it wouldn't surprise me. She is my ex-wife, after all.
For that particular reason.
Tangent.
Tangent. Sorry. Tangent. Special guest on Focus.
No,
look
that's
at him.
The real topic of the show. Baby raccoons and possums and skunks and squirrels and whatever.
And your little pupper.
Oh, yeah. My dog is, if I don't know what people can see, but I have a little dog.
What's your doggo's name?
Joey.
Is that a reference to Friends or a baby kangaroo?
No, he came that way. I don't know.
He just
I don't
came
know
named
what
Joey.
Yeah, we adopted him from a person who adopted him from an agency that rescued him in California, and his name was Joey. That's all I know.
We adopted a dog named Taffy, and we decided that Taffy was a dumb name for like an old lady dog, so we changed his name to Georgie Kostova.
The woman that was my ex-wife's mentor in wildlife rehabilitation, she had even weirder animals. She had a porcupine.
Sure.
And they had a porcupine, and they kept the porcupine in the cage. And outside of the cage, there was a line on the ground. And I was informed that literally what the line was how far the porcupine could piss. Because...
Yep.
So they're like tapers where they'll do that spray? Because tapers are famous for having like a fire hose because they're the kings of marking territory with urine.
Yeah, because the porcupine, if you got too close to the cage and you weren't going to feed the porcupine, he would projectile piss on you.
At the Madison Zoo, they used to have tapers, and I on more than one occasion saw people doused because they were like, it could go like 50 feet. It was like a riot hose. Don't stand behind a taper, Travis. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's our announcements for today.
Yeah. That's my recommendation. Don't stand behind a taper.
You see, you get good life advice on this podcast.
Hey, this is the best thing I've heard all week.
Because I bet you were planning on it. You were like, today I'm going to go behind by... hide behind a taper.
It's Sunday, though.
Huh?
So all week's a short period of time.
Travis, don't be that person.
Yeah.
Or Nathan's totally that person. It's not just me.
Aj, are you Jewish?
No.
Oh, shoot. Because their calendar, I think, ends on Sunday, so I was hopeful. Because that would have been a huge uptick in how long his week had been.
Oh, sure.
If this was the last day instead of the first day. Well, that didn't work out well.
I'm a nerd.
Yeah, when I say week, I mean last 7 days.
Travis, is there anyone here that is not a nerd? Second question. Is there anyone listening to this that is not a nerd?
I mean, that would be a question for the chat,
I think I can't answer either question. Nathan did that to me earlier today. He's like, what did you ask me?
Well, it's in regards to, I'm sure this is going to be one of those Zappity Grumble questions we have, but I said to Travis, I know that the answer is going to be all of them, so skip that answer and answer the obvious sub-question when I ask you, which Warcaster faction are you buying into?
Yeah.
Well, if Travis doesn't have four of everything...
And that's why I knew that first answer just, was a given.
Uh-huh. So he's going to have all five factions, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the thing is, you actually did two questions. It was all of them, and then... There's something else.
Yeah, I don't remember. But I knew his first like three answers, and so I skipped to the fourth question.
And it took me a while to like process through. Like, okay, he answered that one, then he answered this one, Yes, you got that one right.
I speak Travisese.
Yep. It was real fun.
Excuse me, stewardess. I speak Jive.
Andy, when you say five factions, who have you been talking to?
I don't know. I got like two confirmations off of that.
Travis told us accurate. So much before he went live.
I said nothing.
Yeah. He said,
I have this model here.
Something about NDAs are for losers, Oz is a chump, and then you showed us a bunch of stats. Don't you remember that?
That's not very nice.
Well, I know it wasn't. That's why we told you. Why would you say such things?
Wow. No.
You're a scoundrel.
Microphone thief.
No, we didn't do that.
Speaking of, one last announcement. Currently, there is a Kickstarter going on for a game from a company that we all know and like.
And love.
And love.
And love, yeah. And love.
Platonically. And romantically.
Depends on the mood lighting.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's go to Kickstarter.com and look up Warcaster Neo Mechanica.
Yes.
I think you just look up Warcaster.
If you type if you were to Bing Warcaster Kickstarter, it gets you there.
Yeah. Bing?
Yeah, you go
to you're using Bing.
You go to duckduckgo.com, you search for Bing, it takes you to Bing, and then you use that to search for Warcaster Kickstarter.
Oh,
what is wrong?
Is there a more efficient way to find things on the internet? I'd like to hear it.
What is wrong with you?
I mean, Ask Jeeves could probably get you there.
Do you
I don't know if Ask Jeeves still
or
exists.
Lycos?
Did you suffer an aneurysm on the way here? Really?
Do you not Bing everything?
Oh my god. Anyways, yeah. There's a Warcaster.
Bing is an average.
No. We're going to talk about Warcaster.
What?
No,
yeah, Warcaster. And as of now, according to my phone, we are at 297,000, yep. Which is almost three times funded. And there is a pretty big, exciting stretch goal at 300K.
Is it the 300K new Warjacks or the alternate Warjacks?
300K, I believe, is alt sculpts.
Of the
for the Hunter, the Immortal Weaver, and the Paladin Commander.
How are we on Twitter shares for the Kickstarter announcement? Because I believe that was still getting reached at for like the faction wallpaper.
I looked at it earlier today, and I think it was at 260 or 270 or whatever, and I think 300 is the next milestone for that.
We all have Twitters that we don't use. Dust it off, log in one last time, share it to your zero followers, help us get there.
Did ATC follow it or share it?
I know that I had ATC and Crippled System and myself follow their Facebook page. I don't believe that I'll have to double check if we shared the thing, but
we'll have to go share.
There's almost 1,600 people backing it, so even if like a fourth of those people have Twitter, then we should be fine.
And if you don't have Twitter, it's free, and you only have to use it this once.
Yeah, just this one time.
Yeah. Or you could use it to yell at people, too.
Or you could use it to follow the Henschold Scroll Twitter feed.
Oh, my God.
Or you could use it to contribute to the downfall of Western civilization, like most users do.
Yeah.
I think Twitter is evidence that Western civilization already fell down. Like, no, but like it is.
Henschel scrolls.
Henschel scrolls. Oh my god, I'm loving that. Yeah. I'll be honest. I mean, I know this isn't like directly what your field of responsibility, Oz, but like I hadn't played War Machine in like a year and a half. Like I still like the game. I just wasn't actively playing it and followed the Henschel scroll for the last like week or two, and I played like six games in the last week because it bit me.
Yeah.
The narrative in there is it really, really started picking up on me. It is like McBain! Watching
McBane. McBane.
Yeah.
McBane.
Come on, airdropped Karchev. Come on.
Yeah.
Airdropped Karchev is freaking amazing.
And as I was telling Travis about this today, but with the current plot line with
Gorshade and Hexerus.
But it's not Gorshade, it's Gearshield. Gearshield and Hexerus.
The tag team torture session.
Well, it is straight up Gearshield is Count Rugen and Hexerus is Prince Humperdinck, and that is the Pit of Despair from Princess Bride. Because I just see Gearshield just like with his little notes like interesting. And we're in the middle of the not to 50 portion of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, once you hear it, you're like, huh?
Yeah. From now on, that's just the voice that Gearshield has in my head, is that he's just Count Rugen.
No spoilers at all, Oz, though, but are you privy to what goes up before it goes out?
I could, if I wanted to, probably get access to it, but it's not being run by me or anything. I don't officially have anything to do with War Machine.
Right.
I'm a playtester for it, and of course, I help out with whatever I have to do.
Sure.
But Monster Apocalypse is my main thing. So I sign off on a lot of Monster Apocalypse stuff and even write a bit of fiction here and there when we need it. But for War Machine or for any of the other games we make, I'm just kind of an observer inside the building.
Oh, cool.
It's
cool.
Namely Getz and Matt Ryan that writes it. And it's
Mike. Ryan.
Mike, yeah. Mike, not Matt Ryan.
As far
Mike.
As Monsterpocalypse, yeah. Are you responsible for when a card specifically calls out the vacant expression on the ooze's face?
Yes, I write all those details.
Vacant expression. That's an important thing that we need to point out is. About that unit. Like all the others, like here's a weapon, here's its attack, here's some big
thing.
Some
of them are like the disco knee pads.
Yeah, sure, yeah. But those are important knee pads. But just like, yeah, these guys got a dumb look on their face.
Yeah,
no, it's not a dumb look.
It's vacant.
It's just vacant.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, I try when I write those kind of things. I try to allude to a deeper like real world existence for the things.
Yeah.
And part of the solicitation text, which I also write, mentions how they don't seem to have intelligence and that kind of stuff. So I wanted to write that one has a vacant expression, whereas the Absorber, I think I wrote cunning expression.
Yep.
I think is what the card says.
Yeah, there's two of
them. So, yeah. So I wanted to compare and contrast those two things where the Absorber's smart and Metoxo's kind of just a zombie.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I would like, I know how much work Getz and Mike put into doing the Henschold Scrolls, but there's a part of me that would really love that kind of thing for Monpok. Like, I know it's a ton of work, but that's. It's that kind of thing where it can get you into that environment, can get you into that,
that
headspace easier.
Yeah. Because, there's a lot of fluff to be wrung out of there. And so having more breathing room in something like that would be really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're committing to do that then?
I'm making no comments.
All right.
of any kind, positive or negative.
I mean, that was like one of the things I really wanted out of the movie that came out with the giant robot.
Robot Jocks.
No. Damn.
Atlantic Rim from the Pacific Asylum. Rim. No, Atlantic Rim from the Asylum.
Yes. But the sequence that happened with the monsters that came and just started invading and then they ended up dying in like Nevada or something like that. Yeah. I wanted to have like a audio thing for just that sequence there. I don't care about the robots and that. I want to hear about a giant monster.
Oh, God.
What is happening?
Andy just flailed at the he's being violent.
Yeah.
Okay. Careful. Don't break everything, Andy. Yeah. Have we got confirmation that people can actually hear me on the on the live feed?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes, we do.
Have we?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple.
I know you were afraid of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Speaking of hearing you, we have tons of questions from people on the Facebooks and possibly some tweeters and whatnot. I'm not sure about those yet. But before we get into those, the floor is yours if you wanted to A, pitch, B, describe the Kickstarter for anyone who doesn't already know, and C, maybe, gift us with some more information.
Okay. Well, anyone who's completely unaware and hasn't gone to Warcaster.com and looked at stuff or watched the Kickstarter video that Tony put together is pretty awesome. Warcaster is, of course, our brand new game, and it's a sci-fi game, and it shares narrative concepts with the Iron Kingdoms and War Machine and Hordes. It does not share, I don't believe, any mechanical concepts, hardly at all, functioning in the rules. We use Monsterpocalypse dice. We don't have facing on the models, those kind of things. So anybody who's expecting it to be War Machine in space is going to be a little disappointed because we didn't want to make War Machine again. War Machine still exists. It's not ending. Hungerford was talking recently about new Trollblood and new Legion models that are coming this year. So we didn't want to just do another game that used all the same rules. And we want to do some new and interesting things. We also have kind of been on a kick lately for games that have a sideboard that you play with.
Yeah.
And there's no points because Monsterpocalypse and Riot Quest are both. Your army consists of a certain number of models, and then you get them on the table through summoning kind of mechanics, that kind of stuff. So this is all kind of a natural evolution of that concept into a tabletop miniatures game that's more free-flowing than Monsterpocalypse and Riot Quest.
Would you say that Warcaster feels like the evolution of Privateer Press game design?
Kind of.
Bottled together?
Kind of. But it also does new things that we've never really done before.
Yeah.
It has opposed dice rolls for attack and defense,
which
we've never done before.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things that we're trying out new concepts in this game.
Well, and you can see a lot of the DNA from all the different games into it. Because like you said, it has the summoning and losing and resummoning from things like Riot Quest and Monsterpocalypse. It has the strike dice from your side games. But it still has from War Machine, it has the bases, the inches measurement as opposed to grid based.
Yeah.
So it kind of blends those different aspects of all the games you've had prior.
Yeah. The biggest difference between it and Core War Machine is that there's no model on the table that losing ends the game.
Although technically, killing the opposing Warcaster would end the game.
If you somehow assassinate the opposing Warcaster, you have opened up a whole can of worms for yourself, but you've probably won that game.
Just make sure you're not streaming it.
I kind of want somebody to come up and report that game, like at Gen Con or something. Just come up to the table, bloody. I'd like to report a game. It ended via assassination of the opposing Warcaster.
Can you?
So,
not?
if you're unclear what we're talking about right now in the audience, you are the Warcaster in this game. So we've taken the role of the person managing the battlefield narratively and the person playing the game, moving the miniatures around, and smashed those two things together. The Warcasters, they are in a skyship command deck thing called a rack. They have a whole bunch of troops up there, and they teleport them down to the battlefield, and they fight, but they direct it all from off-site through basically magic, although Neo Mechanica isn't exactly magic, because it's Neo Mechanica, and it runs off of Arcane Essence, a new material that's never existed in the entire storyline before.
Next time you suggest the convention for someone to come up bloody and report a game, don't do it at one of mine.
But Travis, aren't all of them yours? Aren't you at every convention running every War Machine event?
Yeah.
Mostly. Yeah. But
yeah. Just think of how many tarps you'll have to bring to events now.
Do you realize how many bodies I'm going to have to hide?
Well, you know.
You don't have to hide any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to hide those bodies.
You can take credit.
Zombies out in the hall.
Like, mine pits do more.
The first person to do this at Gen Con will be the most famous Warcaster player ever.
Yeah, please don't do that at Gen Con.
Yeah, please don't.
Please don't.
We would rather not have that kind of thing associated with the name of the game.
Save that for PAX East.
Okay.
Yeah, don't do that.
Anyway. Murdering your opponent aside.
Yeah. So
now, one of the things I really do like about the game design is just from the mathematics of it is that everything is set up to have diminishing returns. Is that every aspect of it? Because I am the epitome of the mid max gamer, and I look at everything and it's like wow, and it's like there is nothing that you can completely stack up on and overwhelm with because every feature of the game is built around diminishing returns somewhere.
And it's fun to really see like other people like you continue to try that, like on Facebook, like the number of people who have thought about taking nothing but double shields on the I believe it's the ISR jack is
the firebrand.
Yeah, the firebrand. It's like double shield. It's like no, it's like you guys have learned from things like the Karchev spam and stuff like that. Like that having those diminishing returns really keeps the game healthy by allowing those options, but making it more powerful and more to be flexible and think about these things instead of just slamming 20 copies of one thing into your list.
We were having a discussion earlier about it. It's like, sure, you can have this jack that's arm 5 or arm 6 or whatever the max arm you can get to. And it doesn't matter because I'm going to throw the fury at you or I'm going to use a weapon that displaces you and now you're no longer next to that point.
Yeah.
And you're already activated. Have fun.
You can be unkillable nowhere near the scenario.
Yep.
Well done.
Yeah. And if you haven't played the game yet on a full 4x4 with 15 units, the battlefield, since models can't move very fast in this game, the gates and things are how models really reposition on the table, that if you have a battle happening on one corner of the battlefield, those models are probably not really involved in any fights anywhere else. And they, maybe if they, like the Dusk Wolf with a railgun or one of those kind of models that has a long range weapon, might be able to put some sort of impact on another fight, but they're not just going to cross the board in one turn or two turns and just be where they need to be.
Because even if they're shooting over there, they're not scoring in that zone.
It's really only the ones, I forget which faction, because my brain is too many rules in my head at one time, but the ones that are plus speed on the jack, it's like, sure, you can get to 9 speed. You're not really doing anything, but you're at 9 speed. You can run around. Cool.
Yeah. Running around's fun.
And also I like that the length of the pulse round actually affects what your optimal army is going to look like.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, it's just that there's so many there's so many levels of dynamism with it that you're within one list how you play that list on the table is going to depend on a ton of different factors. And as I said from a min-maxer perspective, I love this because there's no solution.
And it's something like when we play War Machine, like, say you and I are playing a game.
Yeah.
We could have lists that we figured out, like, even sometimes terrain doesn't matter for the probability of how that game's going to play. Yeah. And by different scenarios, you can kind of math that out a little bit, and you can plan it out, and tactics can get around
You can math it out a lot.
But you
turns
can't
out.
Really do that in Warcast. Yeah. You can math out the weapons, you can math out the ranges, you can math out that sort of stuff, but there's so much line of sight blocking terrain, and there's so much, like, every game I've watched of Warcaster, you are deploying models on your opponent's edge of the board. Mm-hmm. That happens at least once during the game.
Yeah.
It's almost every single time I've watched it, there's a model that gets deployed on their deployments when you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah. The first time somebody figures out, like, hey, I'll take this trooper and go past your army and then put my gate behind you in cover on the other side of this building, and then a heavy warjack's coming out next turn.
Yep.
This year, there isn't, as somebody with one of the you know, we played a playtest game today, and with, you know, the rules that are available on the Warcaster.com, and that what they're saying, they like that they didn't have a table edge. Like, there was the table where they deployed off of, like, that was where they started, but by halfway through the first pulse round, it didn't matter. They're walking around the table because their models are everywhere.
It was a giant scrum everywhere on the table. And they were playing a skirmish one, so it's like you're tight, but it's a giant scrum everywhere in the game.
And that was one of our main goals in this game, was to make the entire table live for the game. Because in a lot of games, even War Machine games, you can end up fighting across the center line of the table, and usually sometimes in the middle or one, you know, slightly off center. But that's where the fights happen. In Warcaster, the fights can happen anywhere, and the scenario really drives where your models want to be, when they want to be there, and that kind of stuff.
And the objectives, the different scenarios really force different play style. So it's like the secondary ones are the secondary objectives, how you play, like which secondary objective do you take? Are you really good at killing stuff? Are you really good at moving across the table? There's a lot of neat things to do with how you play that tactically are going to be different based off of which faction you play.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Well, cool.
I enjoy the
Do we want to talk about factions at all before we go into anything else? Just in case anybody's not aware.
There's three currently. There's the
There's three announced.
Three announced. There's the crazy, not evil cultists. There's the kind of rebellion independent people. And then there's the bad guys. Right?
So there's no real bad guys in this setting.
Future space capitalists.
Much like the Iron Kingdoms, you can really see the perspective of any of the factions and see how they think they're the good guys.
Yeah, there are people who cheer for Signar. I don't understand it, but they're out there.
So the Iron Star Alliance is the core civilization, all the companies and countries and anything like that that's really stable. And they do tend to be a little bit draconian in their laws and what they want to control and how they want to make sure that everyone stays safe in their words. And then we have the Marcher Worlds, which is a looser coalition of governments and stuff that are the edge of the galaxy. It's the worlds that are hard to settle because they're either farther out, they're difficult to travel to, their environments might be hostile, that kind of things. And then we have my faction, the best faction.
Well, okay, agreed, because they're the ones I'm down for two starters for.
Yeah, the Eternus Continuum is a secretive cult of people who don't want to die ever.
I mean,
they're willing to replace any amount of their body, basically, except for their brain, to just keep existing. They have worlds. They have worlds that are their entire worlds that no one else knows, like, how to get to and stuff. They have secretive planets, but they're also scattered throughout the rest of the galaxy in little cult cells and stuff.
So we know Oz's faction. David, what's your faction?
I am leaning towards Marchers, but I'm not completely set yet.
Nathan?
As I said, it's Continuum.
Yeah.
Andy?
I like them all.
Which
I have a list of, because we have our we have a running first? Tab, because our local, one of our local game stores is doing the six of each faction starter retail backer. And
that,
so we were kind of doing a head count.
Or pick?
Pegasus.
Okay.
And let me take a look, because I can even tell you what other people are playing.
So which one are you thinking?
Yeah, also
I'm thinking actually either Marcher or the Iron Star.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Well, currently, so if you go Marcher, you have to fight David, because currently our order has 5 ISA, 5 Marcher. So if David goes that, he's taking the 6th Marcher.
Well, I'm taking, I'm all in on one of the
there you go. Perfect. Battle, this was your bonus second one, so you could run demos or play against your wife. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, this is my second one.
My Kickstarter I picked up on, I think, the second level for most of...
My sad story is when the Kickstarter went live, I was at work. And so the first break I had, I logged on to Kickstarter. There was one early bird left, but since I was at work, I wasn't logged in. So in the 30 seconds it took me to log into Kickstarter, somebody else got it.
It wasn't me because there were like 6 left when I got mine.
I haven't backed yet.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That means you didn't take my last early bird, but that's all right. Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to collect everything because that's me.
Yeah.
But I'm doing Continuum right off the bat because, yeah, Continuum.
Yeah. Also, I am excited because we already have a dozen people signed up for it, and we have a ready-made meta in Madison already. So
ours is not as organized yet in Milwaukee, but we're trying to.
Well, you'll drive over here. It'll be okay.
I like the retailer option there so that we can actually get people together and actually have it available for retail. I think that's a great change.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that we supported retailers so that communities could exist, because a lot of Kickstarted miniatures games don't take into account people actually meeting each other and playing the game if they're strangers.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we really want to make sure that stores had a reason to get into this and support the game.
Yeah.
Well, and give people a place to play and meet.
Why is Andy staring at me?
Because you put your hand up, so he was worried you're going to fiddle with your microphone.
Yeah, you're about to.
Don't do no, David. Bad David. But no, along the retailer thing, I agree. I really like the retailer pledge being there because it... One concern with companies doing Kickstarters as a form of kind of like pre-order is cutting out that retail thing, which is bad for the it's bad for the culture. It's bad for the hobby because you need that number one meeting area and you need those people, you know, to exist. And so I like the retail thing. I also like that it kind of cuts out distributors. So it's actually good for retailers that you guys are going through Kickstarter because they can get their stuff straight through you and cut out that extra middle person.
Because that was something that I was talking with Matt about is distributors. Like, it's so hard right now for distributors to get and contain product for any length of time.
Especially as distributors are going more and more the way of Disney, where there's one of them that is the owner of all of the other ones.
Yeah. And it's like they order the new product and then they don't get more new product of that. Like, once it's 2 months out, they don't get it anymore. And so it's just hard. And it's like stores are like, I want the stuff. And from even what the Kickstarter said, it's like it's sitting in the warehouse. They're ready to use it.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, that's direct orders. That's pretty much how things are starting to go. I mean, Games Workshop went direct order a while ago, and then Privateer, from what we're seeing from the outside, is slowly going into the direct order.
Well, yeah, we have a whole system where stores can sign up and set up their own retailer accounts and order directly from us at a discount.
Yep. Which is great.
So just in case they can't get things through distributors.
But yeah, we're kind of like in a really good, you know, golden age of the hobby of board games and miniatures games and all of those, where there's so much out there. There are literally hundreds of miniatures games, you know, thousands of board games, but it becomes tough for stores and the distributors to know what they need to have on hand. And even you as the company doing these things, which is why Kickstarter lets you put your feelers out and see exactly this many people want Kickstarter or want War Caster right now, so you know what supply needs to be for demand. By having the direct relationship with the retailer space, they don't need to cross their fingers and know whether they need to stock 3 Mountain Kings or 0 Mountain Kings. Like, that's better for everyone involved. It feels weird because it's different than where things have been. And when people see, like, oh, my local game store doesn't have any War Machine on the shelf, you know, that's a bad sign. No, your local game store has all of War Machine on the shelf because they can have that direct order straight from Privateer Press.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, I mean, I think that having the retail support for that and keeping that in the loop is a really big deal because, I mean, having the community is honestly the reason all of us play because it would be a lot cheaper to just go to some random video game. But the entire point for the hobby for most of us is actually dealing with people.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that if you had like a list building app or some sort of companion app for it, you you should build in matchmaking and like setting up games and getting actual people to meet and play the game as a core component of that.
Speaking of that, is there something in the future set for Warcaster for like a?
So we're not talking about any kind of apps for it yet, but it's very similar to Monster Apocalypse in the way that you don't really need as hardcore of a list building system because you don't have all the math to do. When you're playing a skirmish game of Warcaster, you get 8 things. That's the only math you have to do is
it's super easy.
You have up to 8 things.
Who remembers trying to figure out what a unit of Bane Knights cost in Mark 1?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 64 points plus 6 plus, per guy.
Oh, yeah. Is too easy. When it was like 113 points plus 17 per guy, and it's like 17 per... What is happening? My brain can't handle this.
Yeah. It's a very modern... aesthetic to just let you take things that are all the same value-wise. A lot of games are going that direction, and as long as the balance is there on the back end and the scenarios drive play and stuff like that, because like people have asked, can you field an entire army of just warjacks in this game? Not if you want to score points
legally
in some scenarios.
Can. Legally you can.
The game doesn't need to stop you from doing so.
I was shaking my head no in the terms of a 4x4. You cannot.
Are you required to bring some?
Not at the moment, because there are only 2 warjacks per faction.
Sure.
So, you can only in a skirmish game, you could bring 4 Dusk Wolves and 4 Strike Raptors and play a game. But if the scenario needed anything like squads to score points or whatever, you wouldn't be actually playing the game to win as much as you'd be playing the game to stop your opponent from winning because you could never score.
And you'd have a hard time. Like, the skirmish one's okay on that because you can use whatever unit you want to score. But it's you're still not using your Furies. They're literally useless.
Yeah. So, again, that's the point is, like, the game doesn't need to make it illegal if it's just wrong to do.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like the right thing. And you can never...
Thing with the built-in diminishing returns for that was that with the rules of setting up your deck, if you don't have a balanced force, you've got dead draws in your hand.
You've got 6 sets of cards or 6 cards that are dead draws because it's three squad and 3 Furies. It's like, congrats, at least half your deck is dead.
Yeah.
And you can't cycle it that fast because you can't play the cards to cycle it. So it's literally 6 turns of cycle. It's so bad if you do that.
Yeah, so we've designed the game around list building that is diversified. No single list, like spamming one kind of thing. If you fill your army with weavers, if someday there are enough different weavers you can take, so if you could take 8 weavers, that shouldn't work.
Yeah. It.
Don't you tell me how to live my life.
You could activate 2 of them a turn, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
The big thing that I found right off the bat for people that are looking at getting into the game is playing we're going to have 2 starters right off the bat as your field choice because you really don't have a bunch of other stuff out yet. And so 2 starters gives you 8 units right off the bat, and it's super diversified in how you play it. It feels really good on a skirmish level to play the 2 battle boxes. And then as you get more stuff, you start mutating and morphing in. What's up?
Andy's brain has flipped a switch.
Andy's doing Tai Chi.
Yeah.
Okay. What's up?
This would be a very weird version of Who's the Boss for this event. Just put everybody on the wheel and then you just spin them.
Oh my God. No.
No, well, see, that's one of the confusions we've had is there are some people out there that think the weavers are the leaders of your force, and they're not. You're the leader of your force.
Yeah.
You want to have a couple of weavers. You want to have a couple of squads. You want to have a couple of warjacks, and you want to have a couple of solos. But there's no like, oh, this model, I don't need a lot of them, or this is my most important model and that kind of stuff, because it really just depends on how the flow of the game works out. Of what models you're going to need when, and that's the beauty of a system is you can put the model you want in play when you need it.
Yeah. Also, I really like that battle box games actually look interesting.
The skirmish is, in my opinion, skirmish is my preferred play style of this game. The full 4x4 is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different game. Like, there's almost like these 2 sub games inside of it because the skirmish one, you are on each other really fast. In the 4x4. You get engagement, but it's not to like turn 3 of the first pulse. in the skirmish one, you're on each other. We saw what Dan killed a model on his first turn.
Top of one, a solo shot a solo. Now it required, you know, he devoted arc and he used a card and he put a lot into it, but it was possible because guns in this game, well, in the skirmish size, you're getting to that, like, you can shoot almost across the whole table, which is why terrain's a big part of it. Looking at the skirmish thing, there was a lot more terrain than you have in your standard War Machine game, and that was on a smaller table. So per square inch, it was even more so.
You can't play buildings, War Machine washed terrain.
And correct. Yeah. You can't just have, like, two forests and a water, and, like, you can't do that. It's got to be a lot more.
Ruined buildings I have there would be perfect for
it.
Yeah, you could play a massive game on that. Ruined city, really easy. It'd be fun.
Yeah. We'll and that's one of the things we also wanted to encourage a lot in this game is that you don't have to build, like, in War Machine, most of the battlefields look the same because it's a fantasy world. It's very, like, Northern European kind of, grasslands and forests and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But we made the 1,000 worlds setting and stuff that Warcaster takes place in so that you can make ice tables and desert tables and lava tables and city fight kind of situations, but also anything else you want to imagine.
You could have a battle in a cave network if you wanted to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Do how you want to do.
Like, I'm going to make a city table, and we're going to play a city fight in this more than War Machine, because War Machine would be fun for it, but it gets clunky.
Yeah, especially with huge base models existing now and stuff like that. It would just be clunky. Really rough to do
that. It's not bad. It's just a different type of game than we're used to playing with War Machine. But in Warcaster, that's straight up what it is.
Yeah.
And it's totally elegant on it. The rules for all the terrain is not, I'm not going to say simple. It's designed to be usable in a way that you and your opponent decide on the type of terrain.
It's clear what it is.
And then that's what it is.
Yeah.
And then you just use it. And so it's that sort of thing where it's like, oh, what's this wall do? What's this other thing do? No, it's this piece of terrain gives this bonus, and this is what it does, and that's all it needs. And so it feels like, to me, the really neat thing about Warcaster that I like on it is the rules feel distilled down to that essence of what it needs to be to play it. And then you as a player and you as two people trying to play the game can really bring your own life to that game. And so it's like there's I forget, Battlefield in the Box or whatever makes like Energon crystals. Like, that's gonna be perfect for this game. Like, Energon, hey, cool, that's my arc. Like, that's my arc in essence that we're gonna go fight over. And I just put crystal fields on the table, and now you got this really neat different thing for terrain. And it's really cool that you can do that.
Yeah.
I was supposed to have an image up at the bottom of the stream the entire time for Warcaster.
And you just remembered.
I just remembered.
Did you put it up there?
It's up there right now.
I was thinking to go back topic. The only way you could almost do a Who's the Boss style game for this, but instead of being like this, just the you just been to the leader, you just need, it would almost be more like the build a Warcaster.
You spend
one,
a hero.
Where but it would be your list. You would, you would just say, like, my army is flip. It looks like I'm playing this game with a Scourge and a Dust Wolf and these two units.
The Frankenstein
and these
type of
just
this.
Like, here's your random force. Have fun. But that would be a little wacky.
I think a Frankenstein would be best for that. Yeah. Who's the Boss is, it's, I've made it work in two different game systems. And
but you could do a Frankenstein where you just say, whatever, build a list,
factions
stuck
up,
together.
You roll the wheel and you see what comes out.
Yeah. I said it would almost be more like bingo, where you'd have to pull like six or seven balls because it's like, here's your first solo, here's your second solo, here's your first unit, or squad, rather. Here's your second squad.
That's the thing that's going to trip everyone up. Unit versus squad is the hardest thing.
Yeah, it's been one of the things I've had to work on quite a bit in my head, is because unit means thing. It means unit of measurement for your army in this game. It does not mean group of soldiers who fight together. That's a squad.
And War Machine's kind of been out of the norm in that, because when I would get people from other games that would start playing War Machine, they'd point at a solo and say, now this unit is going to do a thing. So now Warcaster's actually kind of switching back to being what other people are already doing. I've heard people use unit just to refer to any individual activating thing, because other games already kind of use that nomenclature. Mm-hmm. So for, oddly enough, for the people who aren't already playing Privateer Press games, it's going to be easier to get used to.
And it's like right now, I can't speak highly enough of it, because it's a lot of fun to play the rules that they've put out and the games, and just even just going, oh, let's try this out, see what it's like. It's like you can play that. The game's a ton of fun. You're going to have a learning curve because every game has that. But it's it's something that watching the video is going to give you a massive kickstart to your being able to play and seeing how the game is kind of intended to play from Privateer Press's kind of eyes. And then just playing the game and kind of being like, hey, this is what's going on.
Yeah, as I have said, I am really impressed with the elegance of the math behind the rules.
I don't know how anybody can not be excited to just sit down at a table, roll some dice, and murder as many ISA things as possible.
I mean, the nice thing about it, too, is it is not investing in a 70 model army. It's much smaller from the initial investment, which I think helps out a lot. I'm sure it's going to grow, but I mean, right now, it does. It's
and even if it grows like two or three things, like two or three units worth of stuff, like that's not like insanely massive growth that you can't keep up with. It's just the what people want to do. Like you're gonna have the people are like me where it's like I need four of everything because I'm me. Yeah. And
well, also and just the way the summoning rules and the activation rules work is that there is an upper limit to how much you can have on the board, or how not just how much you can have on the board, but how much you can effectively have on the board.
Like those of us who have played Mon and Pac already feel that it's like, I brought 17 Scorchers. It's like you're never obviously not 17, but I bought six Scorchers. Well, you're only ever going to get three of them on the board. Like you didn't need to bring those other three. You just cost yourself flexibility in the attempt to spam, but that's not how games work.
I've had one game where all 15 units got onto the table.
Yeah, it's pretty rare in a big game for that. And if you do get all of it on, more than likely on your opponent's next turn, a couple of things get removed.
Absolutely. And you start tripping over yourself. It's like
literally, you're like, I need to go there.
Yeah, it's a very interesting part of that. And your deck building for the rack is one of the cool things on this is you got this deck builder as part of the game as well. We're like, what do I want to do? Like, I personally am not a big fan of return or grunt to a unit, but someone is going to be like, that card's amazing. I put that in my deck every single time.
Right.
That card's amazing, by the way.
I'll
unsummon the unit and I'll summon it back fresh. But, it's just different play style.
It's very, very important when you're trying to hold on to an objective.
Yeah.
That is true.
And only squads can score objectives, but anything can contest. And you've managed to kill everything around an objective, and you have one squad member still standing there, so your opponent just has to kill one model to take that point away from you, and you're right up against the pulse round, playing that card to put a second body back in that squad, so you at least have to take out two models. Is really, really important.
Yeah,
it's all very situational.
You idiot.
Those cards.
You unbelievable fool.
Sure.
But that's one of the great things about the game and the rack itself is that every card is situationally awesome.
Yeah.
But trying to predict which of the 24 cards that come in a starter you're going to need in your 15 card selection and then hoping they come up at the right time and that kind of stuff is very, very important.
I've had four of my cards in my hand go, remove an activation token on four different things. It's like, I guess I'm removing some tokens, but I'm not doing anything else.
Yeah.
Oh, so speaking of that, Oz, can you tell us if there are any plans for card expansions?
So we are not talking about that kind of stuff right now. Okay. We have a lot of plans for where this game goes in the future, but we're focusing really hardcore on the launch right now. And so the starter boxes will give you everything you need, tokens, cards, dice, all that stuff. And those 24 cards are the first cipher cards you're going to get to play with. And until we say otherwise, that's what the cipher card deck options are. But they're every single element of the game. We have a lot more plans for. We're just not talking about them concretely.
I do just full warning. I think there's going to be a lot of questions similar to that when we get to the questions on it. So you can repeat that we're not talking about that right now for several of those future plans, but they're not all like that. And I wanted to call it just one other thing that I just remembered as far as an example of great streamlining of the rules, because it's a simple thing that somehow gets rid of like 12 paragraphs of rules from something like War Machine is squad movement in Warcaster. You don't have to worry about unit coherence. You don't have to worry about all this individual stuff. You pick one guy, you move him, and then the other two just teleport to where he is because that's where the squad is now.
Yeah.
And if the middle one's killed, you don't have to worry about, are they out of formation? Are they in formation? You're just going to move one of the guys, and then the other one's going to teleport to him.
We also really wanted to focus on keeping the squad small. Now, there's no guarantee that three is the maximum size of a squad ever, or that three is the minimum size of a squad ever, and those kind of things.
But 12, but, probably not.
But small squad sizes, as opposed to having to move 10 models on the table, was another one of those considerations for keeping the game fast and having the squads do something, but not having them be an overwhelming amount of models on the table.
And the part of that, too, is like, a warjack, trying to kill a warjack in this game isn't the same as trying to kill a warjack in War Machine.
Yeah.
It's like you don't have to put the same effort that you do in War Machine to really be like, I need to put this jack and this buff and this thing to one round this warjack. It's like, no, I'm gonna
Flip side is in War Machine there's something if you don't one round a warjack. So in this one jacks are full until they're gone, similar to monsters and Monster Apocalypse, although they have obviously the hyper form, but like a monster at one hit point is the same as a monster at five, just like jacks in this. Like if it's not dead, it is fully functional. There's no crippling a weapon.
Correct. Yeah. We wanted to also keep a lot of that bookkeeping and tracking down.
Yeah.
Because it's really all you have to track is your continuous effects, which there's only like four of them that you really need to track.
And then
your arc and wounds.
Arc, wounds, and activation tokens. Yeah. It's really simple to track what's going on and which ciphers are out on which models if they last for a pulse round and tracking the pulse round. It's not like you have way more tracking inside War Machine. Like I think of how hard it is to track, my Infernal Army compared to what I have to track inside Warcaster, and it's monsters.
The tokens are thrown out for all these things, and here's a buff, here's a debuff, this guy's got this one's got that. Yeah.
Quick question on the tokens. Are they just kind of the standard paper ones?
Cardboard. They're just cardboard. Okay. They're just a cardboard token sheet, just like in Monster Apocalypse and Riot Quest.
Okay.
I'm sure just that someone's the third party come or something like that,
maybe. Okay.
Yeah, but to keep the cost of those starters as low as possible, we made them cardboard.
Although one of the stretch goals for the Kickstarter that has already been locked out is for the gate tokens.
Which is amazing. I love those floodgates.
To be 3D models as opposed to just cardboard tokens. So cool. your gates, which they're one of the more core things that's definitely going to be on the table. So it's nice for them to have been upgraded.
Yeah.
I'm excited to actually have real gates.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
If that wasn't part of the Kickstarter, that's one of the first things that I'd have been making.
Yeah.
I did see
the sound you hear would be 1,000 3D printers.
I did see somebody print up some things on their site.
Yep. Don't need to do that, though, because we unlocked them on Kickstarter. Go team.
Mm-hmm.
Oz, I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know an answer to, and I just want your opinion on
Ooh.
It came up in our game today. When does an opponent know what's in your rack? Like, do they know the 12 to 15 cards that's in your rack?
As far as I know, that is not public knowledge, but I don't know what the final rules wording is going to be. I'm pretty sure since you don't get to know what is coming from your deck, then your opponent can't know what's in there either.
But your starting deck, like you know your starting deck. Like you may not remember, you don't know the order, but you could like track what's been played. So your starting deck you do know.
So it'd be interesting. I'm going to ask about it, but that's something I just wanted to see, to pick your noggin on.
That could also be something that if you've heard me talk about Monster Apocalypse at all, I'm a big fan of keeping normal play and competitive play as different, two completely separate things.
Yep.
And if competitive play goes the direction of your 15 ciphers are on your list and written down and all that kind of stuff, then that could be a difference between competitive play and just standard out of the box play on your kitchen table.
And like we similarly said, it would almost be like the equivalent of Steamroller, where like this is just an aspect of that competitive play.
Yeah.
Because that's I entirely agree with you on that, where it's something that the core rules don't need it. Like, who cares? And if you're playing a casual game, who cares? And then if you're playing a competitive game, sure, you can card count if you want. Have fun with that card counting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to some people, be equivalent of knowing your opponent's spell list in War Machine. Like, knowing that they can crippling grasp your unit is worth knowing, and you'll play around it. And similar, knowing your opponent's rack has an option in it. It might not be in their hand,
but
it exists. You know, I could see that definitely for, as I said, for the people who are choosing to play it more competitively, that might be an aspect that they'll add to the game if it's not core to it.
But when I play a game, I don't even care who wins, let alone what cards you're playing with.
Yeah. I've had where it's like the experience of the game has just been like, man, you destroyed that jack in like one freaking turn. That jack did amazing things. And it's like, yeah, that's really cool. And it's just like, you don't really need to win or lose the game to have fun with it.
And different people take different aspects of fun from the same, you know, core. Yeah. So for some people, you know, Oz ain't wrong to feel that way, whereas somebody who definitely wants to card count and know exactly what's coming, they're not wrong for feeling that way. It's good to have the options to play the game how you play and be happy either way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I messed up and got annihilated in a game of War Machine against Travis, but I still had fun.
Did you? I lost my last
tournament.
Turns out
that two of his heavies could get to my Prime Axiom. I'm like, I'm putting my Prime Axiom here because only one heavy can get to me. Half of that sentence was wrong.
And I stared at him and went, I don't know what I can say at this moment.
Yeah, it's all right.
Nathan, you heard about my games last week, right?
Maybe.
So first game, I learned that there's a scenario.
Scenarios do exist.
Hey. And then my second game,
you learned that there's a scenario?
I had that beat back into my head that there's a scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? I'm going to jump this tangent right back into Warcaster. That's the only way to play the game is to play scenario. Yeah. Like, there's no attrition.
There's no caster kill.
It's you play scenario and you play scenario hard all the time. And there's part of it where it's like, I like the difference between permanent and portable objectives. I like that there's some of them that you get to walk around and be like, I'm going to go do this thing. And it's part of the game. And it's like built right in. It's really cool. And the secondary objectives, I think, is a very neat touch for players to be like, I have this goal. I'm going to go do this goal. If my opponent forgets about it, I'm going to score these VPs because it's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing to remember about that is we have another stretch goal for more scenarios.
Oh, goodness.
And the scenarios in the preview book are not every single scenario. Mm-hmm. They are a sample of what kind of scenarios Warcaster will have.
I need to read the – I haven't read the sample book in a while. I need to read it again. I forget what's all in it.
It's got the ring of Arc Geysers. It's got the X of objectives, and it's got the portables to the stationaries, like take your ore to the smelter scenario. I think that's the only three non-skirmish scenarios that are in there, and then it only has the one kind of starter skirmish scenario. Yeah.
And even that starter skirmish scenario is like real good for getting people into the game and showing it off.
Yeah.
Well, we could do – do you have our Facebook up over there, Andy?
I got our Facebook. I don't have –
I posted on the Neo Mechanica group as well, so I have more questions there. Would you like to start or should I start over here? Because we can start with some of these questions from the internet, and, you know, Oz may or may not be able to answer all of them, but even the ones he can't or the ones he can will probably trigger more discussion.
Well, here's what we'll do here is I'll go ahead and choose the specific Warcaster ones in here. Off of the
and then you can come, and then I'll do and these, then, and then you can have the non-Warcaster ones afterwards. It makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Sure.
So Jacob Collins asks, what new demographics is Warcaster designed to appeal to?
Well, we want everybody to like the game.
It's obvious. But
it's specifically designed for veterinarians between the age of 37 and 39.
But to be more specific, like, We knew there would be elements of this game that would appeal to our existing player base, people that were either Monster Apocalypse players or War Machine players or whatever. But we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just another game that they'd already played before. And if there was anybody out there who wasn't one of our players already because of not liking some aspect of one of our games, because, you know, it's valid not to like certain mechanics in certain games. Mm-hmm. Everybody has things that just rub them the wrong way and they don't play. But we wanted to make sure this game could appeal to people that were coming in fresh and never having ever played any of our games before, and they wouldn't have to necessarily know things.
Sure.
So I think the answer is everybody, but, you know.
Zappity.
Travis.
Yeah, Travis,
What are you doing, Travis? I can't see what you're breaking.
I was trying to put
to put a railgun on top of his microphone, and instead it fell down and made metal noises.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
And I had these all nicely symmetrically laid out. It was like an exploded diagram of, you know.
Like you'd see in the No Quarters back in the day.
Yeah, like look at that. See,
okay, I'll try better with a real answer for the next one, unless it's another vague question.
technically these are all like what we would consider like Zappity Grumbles, so they don't even have to be that long. But that was actually a really good answer.
I think there's a couple good ones on here, too.
Yeah.
Some of these are terrible. I won't tell the listeners which ones did the terrible ones.
Yeah, we're fine.
Ask terrible questions.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, that's that's unfortunately the podcast you entered is the terrible one.
Yeah. As children, people tell us there are no dumb questions. Yeah, there's some pretty dumb questions. Let's be honest, people.
We hear you talk a lot.
Yeah.
Jim Goff asks if there's any plans for non-human factions because he really wants to see the gobbers.
You know, that's going to be redacted.
Wouldn't you like to know is the answer to that question?
Like, literally redacted is the answer to that one.
So feel free to ask questions about the future, and I will always generally say the same thing.
So that's where the squats
who knows?
One out of ten, you might be able to say. Maybe. So if you say redacted 9 times and then answer one of them, it was worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
All right, Zavity, Grumble.
Seriously, though, when are the gobbers coming?
Andrew Grove is asking basically the podcast, have you bought into the Warcaster Neo Mechanica Kickstarter?
Yep. I think we all said yes.
Yep. I'm already in it.
I shouldn't because I've spent like $400 on Kickstarters this year already, but I couldn't say no to this.
No, you couldn't. The game's too good.
No.
No, I mean, like I said, it's a even though I have like I'm not Travis level here, but I'm pretty
you're dang close.
I'm pretty close.
Yeah.
I have so much War Machine. Picking up another, it's a smaller skirmish game as well. Yep. So it's not gonna make my basement any smaller.
Well, it calls back to the previous question about new demographics. Like, even though we're already a demographic that's touched, this aspect of the hobby isn't, you know, represented by War Machine or some of the other games. So it's different enough to you know, tick our fancy. It's not like, oh, I already play War Machine, so I'll just pass on this because I'm covered. Like, correct. It's not the same thing.
There's another demographic part of this, too, is the painters. Me trying to paint this Weaver is way different than trying to paint...
Because of the scale?
It's the scale's nicer because it's bigger, but it's also, it's like, how do you paint sci-fi? Like, you don't really get that same sort of thing in War Machine Hordes. You get it a little bit, but it's not the same.
Sure, because it's more of like the, like, they're wearing chainmail and capes, and there are horses, and these are things that you know what they're supposed to, air quotes, look like.
Yes.
Whereas this is just like, hair!
I could tell you which faction Travis has painted the least of them.
Which one?
Retribution.
Yeah.
Because they're sci-fi.
Sure.
They're pretty much the whole faction is sci-fi, Retribution.
Red still feels different than this. And
Red is the faction that, to me at least, is the most just wide open as far as color schemes, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, in no small part because of that. I've seen hot pink Retribution. I've seen black with red highlights. I've seen red with black highlights. I've seen green. I've seen blue. There's the studio standard white, obviously. Like, it's a blank slate because of that versus just like, here's some chainmail. It's going to be gray, silver, and here's the, you know, the tan leather that goes around it.
My Twitch community put purple as my primary color of my marchers.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not a standard color for marchers. They're not purple. The paint scheme on the other one's bile thrall or whatever brownish color it is.
It's a tan color. And I think it's got that bile thrall's in one of our new paints that, Jordan showed off on the live stream on Get Your Paint On Thursday.
Super excited about
those. But Jordan was painting his Firebrand teal and black.
Yeah.
So you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Live how you want to live.
Thousand worlds.
Yeah. Spray paint your army gold and put pirate hats on it like some idiot. Do what you want to do.
Well,
hey, I have a habit of spray painting things gold and dipping them in glitter.
Dude, I mean, I ordered 100 Bart hats for a reason. Like, I'll do something similar here. I don't know what I'm going to do.
100... what's the Gator's hat?
Oh, Long Chops?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All the people now are like, oh, I'll order all these Long Chops hats. I'm like, you are late to the party. I can show you my press gang order from like a decade ago with an angry letter from whoever had to pack 105 Bart hats into my press gang order. I think I got a couple extra because they lost count.
Of course they did.
Pretty soon they just ended up just tipping the small little bin.
It
was like the Patton Oswalt thing. I just said, I want all the Bart hats.
All the Bart hats.
I want all the Bart hats. All right, so then I'll switch over. There's a few from the official Neo Mechanica. Not official. This is unofficial, but you should follow the official, too. But from the Neo Mechanica group here. So I'll start. Richie Kramer had several. Looks like I have a couple rules questions, a couple future plans, and a couple personal questions.
Oh, okay.
So I'll go through them pretty fast. The rules ones are probably whatever. And we have Travis here. So do you ever measure for vertical movement?
Yes.
And it's an inch is an inch, right? Yeah. So climbing's another thing.
Yeah.
Discuss whether ladders exist on that terrain piece with your opponent.
Uh-huh.
Well, and in general, discuss what's climbable and what's not climbable. Yeah. So, like, if I've had this come up before, I think War Machine Weekend 2005 or something, we were fighting on a table and there was a hill and the sides of the hill were rocks and there was a grass strip over the middle of the hill. And I was imagining that only the grass strip was passable. And my opponent was not imagining that. When I said, this is a hill and that's passable, I pointed at the grass strip, but he didn't know I pointed at that. So he charges his models at me and puts them on all over the craggly rocks that you could barely balance models on. And I was like, oh, I guess I should have been more specific. And then I lost that game real bad. Yeah. Well, so you should always discuss with your opponent, but keep in mind things that you think models can traverse and models can't traverse.
Yeah. Like deep water or shallow water.
Yeah, I'll tell you my deep water story sometime, Oz.
Yeah.
If you haven't already.
Yeah, I have on the podcast for sure.
All right, I'm going to take from this chat the most important question here, and this is from Eric Hansen.
What are you doing?
The most important question here.
I'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, but I want to take this to the top of the heap because this is the most important question there.
Fair.
This is from Eric Hansen. How did Aurora and Nemo take all of the hills into space?
Huh?
I get it.
Because there's no hills in War Machine, but you could put hills in this game, I guess.
No, there are still hills in War Machine. They just don't do anything.
Yeah. There's still terrain features.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't get
Go
it.
Along.
Ken Reavers, it's somebody who's salty about the fact that hills don't have a rule in War Machine anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Single tier commercial about pollution, et cetera. Ken Reavers phase into a building and then up through the ceiling onto the roof?
Maybe.
Yeah, that's way more specific than my weekend brain can handle right now.
So we'll go past. Those were all the rules questions.
Can I look? Well,
you can look while I move on. So here's a couple that you can feel free to say no answer at the time. Although this one maybe is a little more solid. Are the rules for all models in the Kickstarter planned to be revealed before the end of the Kickstarter?
I have no idea about that.
Okay. Are there any plans for weapon packs for the Jacks? Like just blisters that have more of just the weapons?
That's not my job.
Sure.
So there might be plans for that, but I'm not a part of every kind of conversation that ever happens, especially about products and stuff. So that one, just wait on information or ask that one on the comments section of the Kickstarter, because I know I've heard conversations about that kind of thing. I just don't know the answer specifically.
Yeah, because the Jacks come with one of each weapon. So if somebody wanted to do a double weapon, they'll, you know, I mean, if you have two Jacks, have one of them have double of a weapon and the other will have none of that weapon and your problem solved.
I thought you were a part of every conversation at Private
Jeff. I tend to be part of very many of the conversations, but not in an official capacity all the time. And I'm always listening.
I know.
What kind of ratio of new faction versus fleshing out of faction should we expect to see?
That's literally redacted.
Yeah.
That's
if there was a general plan, but if it's super deep dive versus if these are kind of more one and done, like convergent style, or if they're all going to expand incessantly, like the core factions did.
Yes,
tell me all the plans.
You will have to wait and see what's coming in the future.
So,
can we get your roadmap for the next 3 years in PDF format? Please?
Yeah, and we'll hold you to it.
Yeah, no problem.
No, I want a PowerPoint presentation.
So, they asked, what faction do you like playing best? I know you said that the Continuum was your go-to faction, but are they the one you enjoy playing the most as well?
I don't have a preference for play style. Generally, when I play a miniatures game, especially when I pick my very first faction, it's visual.
Sure.
It's entirely the models I like the most. Like, I was a Crix player for years because Asphyxius. Like, as soon as I saw that model previewed on the website back in 2002, I knew that was my model that I was going to play the whole faction of, and I was going to deep dive and play them primarily.
I started playing War Machine because I saw the picture of Terminus. Terminus's art and then the Diatrol Blitzer art are the things that got me into War Machine and then got me into Hordes.
I like playing all the factions because Marchers tend to be more mobile, and the Ironstar Alliance has some more synergies, and they have a lot more flexibility to a certain extent. Like, they often can use their melee attacks and their range attacks in the same turn, that kind of stuff, if they're charged. But visually, trench coats and darkness are just kind of my thing. So I have to play Continuum as my first and primary faction.
Andy, did you start with Crix?
Then,
no.
Okay. More specifically, okay, maybe this is easier or harder to answer, but what's your favorite Jack loadout?
I can't remember all the names of the Continuum Scourge's weapons.
That's my problem.
So,
yeah.
I don't remember what any of the names are.
So I will tell you that there will be some people out there that argue min-maxing wise that you should always spend every single build point.
Nope.
But I've ran a Firebrand with two fusion glaives.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there's no 1 point shoulder option for it in the starter box.
Yep.
And the fusion blades have the ability to knock out enemy warjacks attacks from melee or ranged. They have the system malfunction continuous effect. And every arc on a Firebrand gives its weapons plus one melee range. So I was playing a playtest game where I was fighting against a heavy and a light on my opponent's team. And I fully charged up a Firebrand and its swords whacked both those guys and knocked out their guns. So that was really awesome.
Awesome.
And that was technically leaving one build point off the warjack because there was nothing on its shoulder. It was just two fusion glaives. Those fusion glaives were like range 4, and you can spike to hit people with that continuous effect. So even if you spike for one, your second one's still range 3. So I could easily get a position where I could hit both the enemy warjacks and semi shut them down. So that's a really fun build. And there's a lot of other stuff like that. Like you can run double flamethrowers on a Dusk Wolf. Yeah. You can run all kinds of other options.
It's normally easier, like your builds are, if you take a 2 point on your shoulder, you can normally fill the full points on a light. But if you take a 3 point on your shoulder, you're either taking 2 1-pointers or you're taking a 2-pointer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I really like is you can load out a warjack with mostly melee, but still put a gun on its shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So I've ran Dusk Wolves in playtest with double rippers and then stuck a rocket pod on its shoulder or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of options like that where you're not necessarily making melee warjacks or ranged warjacks. You can always kind of dance that border and play a little bit of both.
I think I've done that with double rippers and the railgun.
Yeah.
You can just do this really like, hey, I'm going to go be nasty in melee and then shoot that solo in the face across the table.
Yep.
So here's a question that also kind of came up in our playtesting today. The thoughts behind giving 3 additional slots in the Cypher deck. So the 12 to 15 range versus like 12 to 18 or just 12 or unlimited maximum cap.
So we played around a lot with the different balance on the Cypher cards. And we eventually settled on you're required to take 3 of each. But we wanted people to have a little bit more freedom, but not a lot more freedom. So if you want, you can take 6 of one type and then 3 of the other 3 types. Or you can use those extra slots to make a couple of your cipher types a little stronger. Like you can focus on overdrives or you can focus on harmonics or whatever. But we wanted limitation is what creates fun play generally. And that was the limitation we settled on when we were playtesting, that 15 felt about right. And 3 of each as a minimum was what forced people to take interesting choices.
When I first looked at it, I missed that rule for a little bit. And I'm going to take 6 Cyphers and 6 Furies, and that's all I'm taking.
Yeah.
It's real good when you do that. It's not how the rules work.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it turns out when you cheat, things are really good. Yeah. That's why people cheat.
Yeah. You have to read the rules. It's a funny thing.
Yeah, running around with double daggers chasing down Dracula and... It's pretty good.
Yeah, Fury pretty Dracula. Good. That there was a tiebreak number. It was a contested die roll, and then weapons had a tiebreak number for ranking. But the way they were playing is they just added that to their die roll. And so daggers had a tiebreak of 6, and it's a D6 contested roll. So they're rolling like 12s against rifles that are like a 4. And daggers were just, take that, Dracula.
Yeah, Fury of Dracula was very easy at that point. Yeah. Yeah.
Just, Dracula just cutting that poor guy to ribbons.
Yeah, Dracula, you find him at midnight, you know, and that's what he's in this most powerful is like, no, fuck you. I got 2 daggers.
Take it. Skipping some like tactical questions because I think that the community will flesh that out together. And then a couple that we've already answered. I mean, I guess I might as well ask this, but I assume the answer is yes, but I'll let you kind of like placate people. But are you planning the same not invalidating purchases system as War Machine, i.e. you don't plan currently to retire things and make them unplayable?
So it's super early to talk about something like that, but in general, we haven't ever taken a model away from anybody in any game we've ever made.
So, I'd be hard pressed to see that in this game specifically.
That we've done things in War Machine to try and to try and figure out stuff for stores that want to carry a wide variety of Alliance stuff to kind of have the primary purchases and the secondary ones. And we've kind of phased out a few things like long gunners, and we haven't phased them out of purchasing, but we've kind of
they're not a core unit anymore.
Yeah, we've kind of shifted the game to where long gunners are a more secondary thing, but you can still run them if you want. So I would doubt anytime soon we will ever take a model away from anybody, but it is the real world, and sometimes decisions have to happen, and you sure. know things have to. Sometimes you have to bite down on the worst tasting thing and make a thing happen. But so far,
but right now your official announcement isn't we plan to negate every purchase right, exactly right 6 months after it's released.
There's no official announcement. Yeah. But yeah.
Nathan, you can no longer play Convergence. It's gone.
Yeah, like yeah, it's not going to have like seasons where just stuff's retired on a consistent basis.
Every caster
now,
and every
now Riot Quest does have a rotating seasonal format.
Sure,
we just haven't gotten there yet
because they do it on the what the hell is he called it, seasons or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah, it's going to be seasons based on Gen Con.
Hmm. Although that's interesting because even if they're retired in Riot Quest, they're still perfectly legal in War Machine.
Yeah, and there will be. And there will be format. Different.
Yeah,
there will
yeah, be different. Be, you formats. Can continue to play season one.
Yeah,
even when season two is out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to that end, every caster and every model that has died in Henshold Scrolls is dead forever. You can't play that model ever again. Dead, gone.
Okay, I'm okay with that because they haven't confirmed anything with Mad Hammer yet.
Axis is totally dead.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, sure.
He's not in my list pairing right
Demon
now.
Demon IO is totally dead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damiano.
I did play a lot of Damiano in Mark II. Yeah. He was
Axis
my go-to.
Totally
he was
got
my main
killed.
Pirate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, honestly, Axis
currently
is,
I'm running Morten Ebra as my Convergence caster.
She hasn't shown up yet.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Axis may be like the most boring non-battle box caster in the game.
That's fine. I'm just letting you know, everyone that's in Henshold is dead.
Okay.
Not endorsed by Privateer Press at all.
Hey, but the Henshold scrolls are written by an unreliable narrator.
Correct. Yeah,
so you never know.
Correct. But also, maybe yeah. Axis 2.
As an actual, like his soul got yeah. saved by something?
Yeah.
So wait, does that mean that if Haley 3 is dead, so is Haley 1 and 2 dead as well?
Oh, yeah.
Bonus.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And then we'll just buff Haley 2 right off the bat. We're at it.
Yeah, what about 50-foot Haley, though?
And all of the lads. Alive?
I don't know if this is a something from the Kickstarter that I missed, so I'm going to ask this question, and maybe I just said something I didn't see. But can you tell us more about how the biodegradable packaging?
I know nothing about that. That is
a Kickstarter thing. So
we are basically going to replace blisters with a different material.
Yeah, this no longer exists. It's going to be like a cardboard.
Sure.
Which is this doesn't degrade.
Yeah.
Or in our conceivable period of time.
Sure. That's what it's use to hold up my super glue in my
How many of these
pockets.
Do you have?
Yeah, I believe you can still buy plastic from other people, Andy.
Like
I
have like
I need that specific
70
one.
Of these in my basement.
Just give me that one.
No,
just
I need
that was one of the stretch goals.
You said you don't need it. You have so many.
We're just trying to get rid of single-use plastic to a certain extent because single-use plastic is, you know, going to destroy the planet. Mm-hmm. Along with everything else. But
we just ship
part.
Them back to you.
The two things that'll destroy a planet are single-use plastic and infernals.
In my defense, I'm no longer working on drone AI for the Defense Department.
Plastic is the infernals of packaging materials.
I sure. will neither confirm nor deny that I am part of that packaging material.
Fair.
Well, Travis, no matter what, that packaging material is part of you.
Damn it!
Everyone has plastic in their blood.
Yeah.
When the idea of this game was mentioned, what was the initial reaction from the team?
Oh, that's
us?
A cool one.
Yeah. Yeah. This came up at the office, I'm just like, hey, what about 5,000 years in the future after people escape through a portal and then we play a skirmish game with this mechanic and blah, blah, blah. Like, tell us about the team's reaction.
The weird thing about that is we've literally been talking about this game for years, but not this specific game. We've been talking about the next game. And if it was a sci-fi game and all those kind of things, and we've had conversations about if the name of it was this or that or whatever and what the core concepts would be. And that has been an evolving conversation for a couple of years. It's just more in the recent past that it's turned into 5,000 years after the current Iron Kingdoms and a different galaxy and super sci-fi and all that kind of stuff.
And like even mechanics, like I don't think I would say not last year Gen Con or even last year Lock and Load, but like pre last year's Lock and Load, I highly doubt that there was a mechanic for like this is how the system's going to play. Probably didn't even exist.
Sure.
And yeah. It's like that is an evolution. That's a growth.
But I have been all on board for us making a real sci-fi miniatures game since I started in 2011. Mm-hmm. And I love Monsterpocalypse dice. They're my favorite kind of system of just – I mean, I used them in Omega Protocol when we weren't even publishing anything using them at the time. So like they're my go-to kind of simple math dice. So yeah, I've always been on board with the game. And then we've discussed different elements of it that have evolved in different kinds of ways, and we're here right now.
Along the line of the Mompoc dice, I do want to make one request if it's not too late for Warcaster.
probably is.
No, I believe in you, Oz. I need the blue boost dice to be in it somewhere so I can continue to refer to them as bloost dice to enrage Travis.
No, they're gone forever.
Bloost dice, Travis.
Boost. Never say never, but there's currently nothing public about blue dice ever appearing in Warcaster.
Could there possibly be some mispacks with some bloost dice in there?
Boost,
Travis, because they're blue boost. And they boost. It's bloost.
Boost.
Bloost.
Action, boost, power.
Bloost.
Can I get a picture of you just like pulling your hair out and then we'll take that and put that on a t-shirt and said bloost?
Oh my God, you'd make millions.
So just a few more, and then we can go to the non-Warcaster specific random zappity grumble
the real
questions.
Zappity grumbles.
Yeah. Okay. Are all the shoulder weapons set up to be magnetized for both shoulders on the heavies?
No.
They're shoulder specific? Or they're not symmetrical?
Travis,
hand weapons are?
You don't have a heavy.
Not a heavy. Is a lighter or heavier? Or they just
this said heavy, but I mean it if you have heavies. A light in your hands.
So the real question is... there, even the Scourge has two shoulder mounts because the Scourge has a fixed arm and then an arm mount and two shoulder mounts. I don't know what the engineering on every single piece is, but if you look at the Firebrand, the 3D rotation that is on the Kickstarter page, it's got a rifle bayonet on both arms, and that rifle bayonet's point contact is the disc on the backside. There's an inset in the arm. And there's a disc on both sides that plugs into that inset. So you can mount those asymmetrically any way you want. So I would guess that the weapons are going to have mounting options for either side because that's what we've done so far. But I don't know. I'm not in that department. I can't promise 100% that they're all going to be engineered that way. But we are engineering things to be magnetized and be interchangeable and stuff like that.
I would argue that for like the Dusk Wolf that I have in my hand. You can only put the shoulder. You could make it work on the left shoulder. I'm sorry, I was talking to the side. My apologies. You could make it work on its left shoulder,
but it's not designed.
But it's not designed to sit on there.
Well,
like it fits.
Yeah,
perfectly.
The Dusk Wolf only has a mount on its right shoulder.
Yeah,
right. Whereas if the heavies but actually do have two mounts,
the Strike Raptor will have two mounts.
Yeah. So it's
so it might vary from jack to jack.
But like if they're expecting like I want my Dusk Wolf to have a gun on the right arm and the gun on the left arm. That's like a gun on the right arm shoulder, and then this other jack has a gun on its left shoulder instead. I don't
like for aesthetic purposes.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to modify the model to do that.
Yeah.
This one's already been answered, so I think this one's already been answered as well, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I like the way it's asked, and then we just have two more after that because we talked about when our non-human faction's coming. Mike Carey would like to know, where is the goddamned robot faction? So, same question, but I wanted to get it out there because I like his wording. Does the ISA Morningstar run on ARC or the salty tears of players facing the double shield, double null variant? Everyone's all about the double shield on these guys.
It's
and as you said, like you're just going to slam them 6 inches back and then they can enjoy not being in the game.
Yeah. Every single time.
And I think people will learn that. Like it's so fresh. It's so young. People latch onto that. And it's the mindset from previous miniatures games, including War Machine, of like, what happens if I put 30 of the same unit in? What happens?
Just theory crafting is the thing. Is most of the time you'll answer everything that you're wondering about by playing the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I always specifically encourage people to never make judgments based on theory to play games because I get this a lot in Monster Apocalypse. People are like, well, this monster just, it doesn't do anything. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, I played it and it's awesome and I love it. So you cannot, no matter how smart you are, imagine every circumstance or situation that might occur during a game and what your resources will be. Often it's very frustrating from our perspective to read some comments on the internet when people say like, oh, this model always beats that model, because most of those arguments in War Machine especially don't take your opponent into account, what the, as actually in their army, the setup of the terrain, the scenario you're playing.
Right.
So blanket statements of this model's not good are just never accurate, because every model has a use. Some of them might be more edge case, but everything is useful. And finding creative purposes to use things that people aren't expecting often wins you games. You can ask top players that play models that people don't expect, and they will tell you how they win games with them. So
you can bring up Carnotrons later.
Yeah, Carnotrons. Good stuff. So last war...
Have you played Carnotrons with Mecha Maxim yet?
Not with Mecha Maxim, no.
Okay.
Because my test game with Carnotrons was prior to Mecha Maxim.
Yeah.
It was with Mecha, the first Mecha to come out, Ghidorah.
Gorgadratron.
Yes, but no. Early, it wasn't Gorgadratron.
It was Terracon.
It was Cybercon.
Yeah. Mecha Maxim does a bit more for units than either of those other monsters.
Good.
Because of the Mastermind ability.
Last Warcaster question.
I derailed Nathan so hard with that.
I mean, my counterpoint is he'll do more for units that are better than Carnotrons. but I don't want to start a fight with him. Travis, you started this fight. I love Oz too much to do this. You're trying to break us up. Last Warcaster question before we go to random Zappy Groobles. I'll rephrase it, but as far as measuring models that are different vertical heights, is it a two-dimensional measurement, or are we measuring with the tape measure at an angle? Do you recall, Travis, or do you,
I would have to look in the rules.
Like, if something's 9 inches away but 2 inches up, is it 9 inches away, or is it, like, 10 inches away, because that's how a diagonal would work?
So I believe that you measure things the real distance between models. So that would incorporate an angle if you were measuring something on top of a building versus something that wasn't.
When measuring distances, measure from the closest point from one location to another. So closest point to closest point would be diagonal.
Including three-dimensionally speaking. Yep.
There's nothing that talks about this. Mm-hmm. It says when measuring distances from or to a model, measure from the closest point of the model's base. Yeah, so it's
closest, it's real
base
world
to closest base.
Tape measure from base to base, including vertical. It isn't just, you know... They are 9 inches apart and separately one has 2 inches of elevation. It's a literal direct diagonal measurement. Perfect. Yep. Question answered.
That I don't see anything in the rules that state anything outside of that.
Well, then we're ready for random chaotic Zappity Grumbles. Just to, as the guest, would you rather answer these first or last?
Or not at all.
What's my other option?
I mean,
not at all.
You could answer
when it's your
Nathan.
Turn to answer. You're welcome. I mean, yeah,
you can just pass.
You could do it.
Oh, you mean you guys are going to go around the table and everybody
a question, and we'll go around the table, and you can be first or last,
or in the middle.
Where would you like to do it?
I will go first.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, they're not all like quick answers either. Like the first one here is,
and you're allowed to not answer specific questions. These, you can abstain.
They're technically supposed to be more lightning round, and that's what
it's meant for.
But. Most people just post like
you can give
topics.
A short answer to any question.
I can't give a short answer to any question. I'm not capable.
Oz and I have attested we will be up till 2 a.m. every night at Gen Con because that's Oz and my...
Hey, 4 a.m. if we're lucky.
Oh, God, we've done 4 a.m. It's amazing. And then get up in 2 hours.
Zappity.
All right, Grumble.
Okay.
What is the best model conversion you have seen, and what is the best that you have done yourself?
Best model conversion I have ever seen. I can't remember. I'm sure there's a model conversion I have thought was amazing, but I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
What about what's the one that you've done? That you've
done myself? You know the old, I think McFarlane Toys put them out. They were Hellraiser action figures.
Yeah. Sure.
And they were like a deep dive. There was like one that was like a giant fat guy on a weird surgical table with like worms coming out of his guts and stuff. One of those was full of a bunch of hooks, giant hooked claw things. And I cut all the fingers off of a Slayer and put those on instead.
Ooh.
And so the Slayer had these asymmetrical, giant, plastic, bloody hook claw fingers. And nice. Yeah, and it was like a Scything Touch conversion in like 2004 War Machine.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Which one have you seen?
Which ones have I seen? I've seen a lot of conversions. I'm not too many.
What's your favorite?
Cool, because I have two.
My favorite conversion, though, the one that I've done, is my Dire Troll. I have a Earthborn Dire Troll that is standing upright.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and pointing. Neat, yeah. That is a real good mod, yeah. That one's a very
neat one. Oh, I know my answer.
Yeah.
Charles Foster III has a Tron Retribution army.
Yes.
Have you seen his Rinzler?
That one's amazing.
He has
Gareth
double pistol.
Gareth 1,
but yep. He's got Tron discs in his hands, yep. and he had a friend sculpt a Tron helmet on him, and he painted them all right for Rinzler. Cool. Yeah. It's really amazing.
Wait, Rinzler's Tron? Spoilers! God.
I didn't say that. I never said that.
Oh, my goodness.
He said from Tron.
Yeah, that's true.
I said from Tron.
People do forget that Tron's the main character of Tron. Like, even the movie forgets that Tron's the main character of Tron.
And he's also one of the main characters of Tron, too.
Walgreens is selling two Tron action figures. I know because I went there and I bought one of them. But neither of the Tron action figures is Tron.
I'm disappointed.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Okay.
Travis?
My favorite conversion is probably the one that I got the most grief from Hungerford about, which was Chris Green's Mountain Kraken or Kraken King. Take your pick. It was a
Mountain King with a Kraken on its back.
Merged. It wasn't just on its back. It was merged. Like it was combined together and like this intricate, really neat looking model that was both a Kraken and a Mountain King. It was really neat. I don't really convert, so I guess my coolest conversion would have been me making the Phoenix have a double-handed grip on the sword.
Which is a great conversion that I support, but you made a Darkwing Duck Gorman DeWolf as a gift for me.
I don't think I convert. I think I just painted that. Did I do the face different?
I think you squished his mask.
I might have had someone else do it.
Yeah, whatever. Fine. Yes. I'm trying to think.
But yeah, the Darkwing Duck was one that I did. I painted that conversion for you. But yeah, I think just like the Phoenix doing the two arm thing is like that Jack looks really cool with holding the sword in a kendo stance.
And it's a relatively easy conversion too. I do recommend people do that to their Phoenix. I'll throw out two. There's the person, the Protectorate Battle Engine. They turned it to the Hot Rod of Menoth because they put it down and then added wheels, which was great.
Sure.
And a similar mod is somebody took the Retribution, the first battle engine, and my brain keeps going to EP, but that's a convergence one. The
Tantric Force Generator?
The AFG, they made it bipedal.
Sure.
By taking those big waves and putting them, the ATST style. And then my favorite conversion, there's, the 100 Bart hats, but the one I haven't done yet because I'm scared because it's going to require some good, like, surgical saw because it's not a straight cut, but I have a Rinnie and a Reinholdt, and I'm going to head swap them so that we have the human lady body with a Reinholdt head and then a Reinholdt with the human lady head, and I don't know which one of those is going to be more disturbing.
Can they both be the answer?
I mean, they're probably both going to be the answer, but I'm excited to see what those two things look like with each other's heads.
Are you going to paint
it's going to be like from Mars Attacks when they put Sarah Jessica Parker's head on her dog?
But are you actually going to paint the skin tones like the Rinnie with the flesh skin tones and the gobber head?
I'll probably make her whole thing, including the Reinholdt head, be flesh tone, and the whole gobber, including the human head, be gobber flesh tone. So it's not like their heads were swapped surgically. Oh. They've always had those
this
heads.
This would just be a scorn. Okay.
I approve of this entirely. Yes. 100%.
Andy, you're pretty good with
flesh
surgical
tones
sauce, right?
Everywhere.
Yeah. So I'll bring them. I'll let Andy try to cut a head off for me.
Yeah, so I think
out of context.
My favorite conversion of all time is going to be a 40K one where somebody took a to represent an orc battle wagon, called it a looted Carnifex, where they had a bunch of orcs riding on the back of a Carnifex, and
that would be cool.
And the orc up front had reins on it and was had a goblin on a fishing pole dangled in front of the
carrot.
Yeah, that's dangled cool. In front of the Carnifex.
What about the Pain Givers on stilts? That was the
It wasn't the Pain Givers. It was the Titans, the little Agonizers.
On Agonizers. That's right. The Agonizer on stilts for the Mammoth, and they just had like boxing gloves on sticks.
The to that point, you did. Didn't you do Brian's Lion King Mammoth?
Oh, yeah,
yeah. I was going to say for War Machine, my favorite were the Lion King Mammoth.
Who did that go to? Who bought that?
Oh, I don't.
Because Brian sold his Scorn.
I have no idea.
There is also the person who did an Orc Stompa made out of a Mr. Potato Head, and it is the most beautiful thing you will ever see in your life. Just Bing Orc Stompa Mr. Potato Head, and it is absolutely astounding.
Why do you support Bing?
What?
What influence do they have on you?
So quickly to go over the David's thing and what he's talking about is the Lion King version of the
Pride
of
Rock.
the Mammoth. Yeah. Is I built Pride Rock and I put a mammoth onto it, and in between his two tusks, I have an agonizer that's just hanging.
I'm king
there.
Of the worlding.
Yeah.
Well, even without the agonizer, it was great because then the mammoth could actually get base to base with it. It's on a 45 degree angle, so it's above stuff.
Yep.
I have a second answer.
Yeah.
My other favorite conversion I've ever personally done is most of my scrap thralls have parts from other War Machine models on them.
That's cool.
I did an insider a couple years ago with Irisk's hat, just like on the side of a scrap thrall head, and then his weapon hand is also on its arm, so it's Irisk, but it's just his hat and his weapon.
So now
somehow having survived.
So now I want to take 60 Mechanithralls and make them different warcasters from each faction.
Oh yeah,
several Adepticons ago, it's incredibly windy outside, and my Midas fell off my tray and broke, and I found everything except for the head of the spine he's holding. Yeah. So my plan was to lemons into lemonade is magnetize it and get a Warpwolf head, a Dire Troll head,
cool.
And just like whoever I'm playing against, I got one of your beasts.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Zappity.
A cool thing.
Yeah, I am going to say that the best thing about 40K is orc players.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't I say orcs? Not orcs. Orc players.
Yes. they really get into it. I love orcs too. Andy and I talked about this recently. Oh, orcs are such a unique concept that to be spores instead of they took a standard fantasy thing. Because I believe last year somebody was talking about subversion of a fantasy trope in a piece of fiction. And, you know, Retribution's a great example from War Machine because that's not your Legolas-style elves. But the orcs in 40K aren't orcs. They're these weird cockney fungus magicians. None of it makes sense.
See, when you're explaining the Carnifex, them writing it, I'm like, they're not writing a live Carnifex. They hollowed out a Carnifex and made it move because they thought it could move.
Yeah.
That's what I went to in my brain. Yeah. I get what you're doing. They took a live Carnifex and they're riding it around, but they hollowed out a Carnifex and driving it around like a car.
They're both believable.
Well, yes. Yeah.
Like the age of Speed Freaks was literally, wasn't it that or Gorka Morka, where you could carry as many boys as you wanted as long as they fit on the truck and didn't fall out if you moved it.
Barrel monkeys.
Yeah. That's pretty much
zappity.
Zappity. Crumble.
Chad asked a question of other people in chat, but nobody answered them. So what was the question to the non-human faction? What was the answer? And the answer was
redacted.
Redacted.
No, the answer is wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, that is true. The answer is wouldn't you like to know?
Redacted can contain that inside redacted,
but it wasn't redacted.
I know.
No, I didn't redact it.
I redacted.
I gave an answer.
Andy could redact it later and make you wrong.
Yeah, I could. I could bleep over everything that you say, Travis. Every time you speak into the mic, it'd just be one long beep.
No. If
just
you
make
put
it say
a thing
bloost
on the screen that says redacted, bloost. I would hate
every
you
time your mouth moves, it just goes bloost.
I would never come on this podcast.
Warm a horde's bloost.
Oh, is that a promise?
Yes, that is a promise.
Zappity.
Crumble. What is the weirdest thing you've seen from other states? You've seen... Oh, my God. Words.
Wow.
What is the weirdest thing you've seen people from other states do?
Okay. So I've lived in a number of other states. So I guess that this person means someplace I haven't lived?
Sure.
Yeah. Basically, them foreigners from other states.
I've seen people from Illinois choose to live in Illinois, and that's a weird thing to do. Does that count?
Sure.
Isn't it like a Pennsylvania thing to put cheese on your apple pie? That's wrong.
Wait, what?
Pennsylvania and New York.
People put cheese on their apple pie, like a slice of cheddar.
Yeah.
And it just melts on in. I don't think I'm judgy enough to answer that question.
Yeah, I'm judgy enough putting cheese on apple pie. That's just wrong.
And we're Wisconsin. We like cheese on everything, and I still don't get the cheese on your apple pie thing.
We deep fry cheese.
Yeah.
One of the best things I've ever seen someone from another state do is when I went to New York for Toy Fair a couple years ago, and this point is probably 10 years ago, I was aware of poutine, but I had never been north enough to really have any. And I think as part of the entire Freedom Fries movement in New York, someone can correct me, someone can fact check me, but in my mind, in my own imagination, this is what happened. Someone decided we couldn't call them French fries because of, you know, the French not supporting us. So they called them Freedom Fries. So in New York, on every menu I saw while I was there was a thing called Disco Fries, which is just poutine. But it's
disco.
But in New York, they call them disco fries. And I had disco fries at a couple of places because I love cheese, even though it hates me. And, you know, I will always try any kind of cheese on something. But at the airport, they use brown gravy and nacho cheese.
The nacho cheese seems really wrong. Like the brown gravy, like poutine, I think normally does have brown gravy on it.
Yeah.
Sure, but like nacho it's like greasy airport brown gravy.
Yeah, well, no, that's
and nacho cheese. So it's just like heartburn. heartburn. But it was pretty amazing. I did not regret it at all.
Was that at least before you took off or after you landed?
It was when I got to the airport in New York. I can't remember which airport I was leaving from. And I had like an hour before my flight, and I was wandering around, and I saw disco fries on the menu, and I asked a question, and they said nacho cheese, and we were done. Sold.
Push the chips all in.
I think Zappity on that one.
Yeah. So if Nathan loathes ketchup so much, what do you use in meatloaf?
Point of order, I said ketchup's the worst condiment. It's fine as an ingredient. As long as it's not overpowering, that's its issue as a condiment. All you can taste is the ketchup.
If I consume all my fries with ketchup, would I consider that? I would consider that an ingredient.
Well, you'd be wrong.
Well, as a topping.
Nope. No. You can't be wrong about that.
By Nathan's definition, is a topping on a burger a condiment or an ingredient?
it's a topping. I'd consider a condiment.
Okay.
Yeah. An ingredient is something added during the cooking process.
Yes.
Obviously.
So assembly is not cooking. Assembly doesn't count.
Assembly.
So is a hamburger.
Putting mustard onto your burger is not part of cooking that burger. That is adding a topping or a condiment.
Any layman can put a burger together.
So a bun is a condiment.
But that's part of the preparation of the dish.
It's not an ingredient. A bun's definitely not an ingredient. There are toppings, there are buns, there are condiments. Those are all different things, but none of them are ingredients.
I would like to know what a bun is. I want you to define what
this is. I'm just going to remind Nathan that in New York, a burrito is legally a sandwich.
Yeah, that's fine. It has its bread container, whatever.
But Travis, the bun is the handle.
Yeah. It's the edible storage and delivery container.
You broke me, Oz. Well done.
Well done. So I have my favorite meatloaf story ever.
So my mother acts.
My mother, when we were children, accidentally bought pizza sauce instead of tomato paste. Ooh. And she made meatloaf once with pizza sauce, and she didn't know she bought it. And we all ate it, and we were like, this tastes like pizza. So you can substitute any other tomato-based product in your meatloaf to make a meatloaf.
Bloody Mary meatloaf.
I would suggest pizza sauce every time.
Yeah, that sounds like an upgrade.
Pizza-flavored meatloaf.
I'm not a meatloaf fan, but that definitely sounds like an upgrade over the standard recipe.
Yeah.
That sounds actually really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marinara?
Not too much, though, because my tummy don't like.
There's my answer on ketchup.
It's okay as an ingredient, and I was wrong about my ingredient.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Those are my double questions.
No, I was wrong. Nathan held a very, very good argument that it swayed me pretty much immediately.
You folded like a wet noodle.
Yeah. Okay. Do you believe the impending pandemic will affect the turnout at Adepticon?
Nah.
Yes. Well, yeah, they canceled Emerald City Comic Con a couple days ago.
Yeah,
they've said it's officially moved to the summer, but they haven't announced a date yet.
Yeah.
Now, also Seattle is kind of the hot spot for the whole COVID-19 thing right now.
Being a port city.
Yeah, Andy, why did you invite somebody to the podcast that's from the coronavirus capital?
Oh shit!
Are you trying to get us all killed?
Here, let me turn off the TV so we don't catch it.
Well, you've heard of computer viruses; they come through. That's what they mean, right?
So I would doubt it's going to severely affect Adepticon just because it's so far from the breakout points. But I think a few people will be scared.
Yeah.
And you could bring it.
We have patient zero.
I can get some for you.
I do like as soon as you brought up coronavirus, I instinctively just started touching my face.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I have a hard time not touching my face. It's a problem.
I have a hard time not touching your face,
too. I have
been washing
my hands. As much as possible.
My favorite.
Constantly.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say my favorite thing I've seen recently is the meme with the gal that's giving all the instructions on now what to do with the coronavirus, and then immediately puts her hand to her tongue, and then it immediately cuts to Kirby Enthusiasm.
Yeah,
because she's trying to move the page. Yeah.
My favorite coronavirus thing I have seen so far is someone took a cartoon infographic of how to wash your hands. And they put the fears the mind killer text on it.
Yep.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we do actually have some cases. There's a couple cases in Wisconsin. There's some in Chicago as well. But I mean,
I think we actually had the first confirmed case in the U.S. here.
You don't need 7,000 rolls of toilet paper.
Correct.
Calm down. Wash your hands. Don't make out with anyone who's actively coughing. Don't lick Subway handles. You'll be fine.
But are you really living if you don't do either of those?
But
things?
You can lick your Subway sandwich artist.
You can lick your Subway sandwich artist if they consent to it.
Only consent. Yes,
I am not giving you permission to lick random Subway sandwich artists.
Wait, so you're giving permission for people to non-consensually lick other people?
No, I'm giving permission for you to ask seek out, whoever you want seek whether they give consent.
Yeah.
For you to lick them.
For you to lick them.
Yeah.
I think it is fine for you to seek consensual Subway sandwich artist licking. Don't be shy. Yeah. Ask that Subway sandwich artist.
I mean, the nice.
And then
thing-
explain to the nice officer that
you got permission.
Make sure you have it on camera.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. But I mean, it's only a couple weeks away here for Adepticon. It is getting closer into the spring area, and that's usually when I'm not talking as in I know anything about the
just
coronavirus.
Drink malort, and it'll kill all the viruses in your mouth.
It's from my understanding, it's very similar to like flu, and flu has a harder time traveling in warmer weather.
Can malort be my new answer for the weirdest thing that somebody from another state did?
Sure. It can also be your answer
for
all of your friends.
Yeah.
Oz, did you see the email I sent you?
When did you send
it?
It was about malort.
I have seen emails you have sent me, Travis.
Were they about malort? It's about malort.
I might not acknowledge I ever saw a malort email, though.
All right.
Ever.
I sent you a malort email.
But yeah, to answer the question, I am sure turnout will be down at Adepticon because of it. I don't know that it will be a lot.
Who knows how much
it is. A measurable amount. Yeah, at least one person will stay home out of fear. So technically, yes, attendance will be affected, but
they've opened the cart up longer for refunds due to it. So, and the hotel's taking a bunch of precautions on it.
It's not going to be canceled. It's not going to be down 50%. It's, you know.
Yeah, they had sent off like a gigantic checklist that they're going to be doing to help.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
People cleaning
things. Don't be offended if I don't shake your hand if you meet me at Adepticon.
Yeah.
I don't think there should be really any handshaking.
I'm normally a hugger.
Should
I
all
might
be consensual
have to not
licking.
Do that.
No, yeah.
Sure. All right.
I'm always a hugger, but yeah, I might have to change it.
I guess we've answered this real well.
Yep. Zebedee.
Grumble.
What is your favorite dessert?
Every single one of my favorite desserts involves ice cream.
Okay, so cheesecake and ice cream would work?
No.
Oh.
No.
Because he's then saying, why are you wrong? Because it should be cheesecake.
Yeah.
Well, not a big fan of cheesecake. No. I will eat cheesecake. I will eat anything with sugar in it because I have a problem, but I prefer ice cream, even though it hates me.
Yeah.
And I will say I prefer, and this isn't some weird like nationalistic thing. It's legitimately because of the differences in consistency. I prefer American ice cream over gelato. I think gelato is way oversold.
I agree with that.
I think, yeah.
I am a big fan of strawberry ice cream and strawberry shakes, as pointed out by me getting sick at Warfare Weekend for drinking two large strawberry shakes.
It's Shamrock Shake season.
No, Shamrock Shakes are disgusting. It's strawberry shakes all
day. You are wrong. Mints are great.
You're wrong. You are wrong.
My top three desserts are pineapple upside down cake, key lime pie, and cherry cheesecake.
My favorite dessert and the best dessert is Bananas Foster.
I don't know what that is.
It's alcohol and bananas set on fire.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And it's usually over ice cream.
Like brown sugar, and you pour it over ice cream. It's pretty good.
Lots of cinnamon.
Yeah, lots. It's good stuff.
Cinnamon and rum and bananas and ice cream. It's good.
My favorite dessert is you can get it at your local Chili's. I'm not sure exactly what it's called, but we call it the Molten Disaster.
Yeah, it's the volcano cakes.
Yeah, it's like chocolate on chocolate with ice cream on more chocolate and more chocolate.
Chili's also has like the big chocolate chip cookie that you eat half of and then you're tired of it and then you have diarrhea later. But I do still order it, even though that's true.
That is not my experience.
What is wrong with you?
That, but
it's just too much.
We don't have
cookie.
Enough time on this podcast to answer that question.
I don't know if we have enough time in life.
And meanwhile, Taco Bell expand,
like disappear first.
I'm immune to Taco Bell, but that goddamn molten cookie.
So here's, I don't understand some people. My girlfriend. Her son.
You
can
just stop there.
No,
continue.
No, I've already.
See, I have to be careful because my wife listens to this, so I don't know if you're in a similar boat.
Nope. I've already talked to her about it, but basically, she and her son went to Chili's and they had dinner.
Fine.
And then they drove. It's like only two blocks away. Then they went to the Cheesecake Factory to get cheesecake.
Yeah, they have cheesecake at Chili's.
You can have cheesecake at Chili's. Also, you could pay like $20 less and just go and get like four cheesecakes from the grocery store.
Sure. Yeah.
In the amount that you paid Cheesecake Factory
but
for their cheesecake.
It's about variety.
Just never go to the Cheesecake Factory. It is the worst.
It's so expensive.
And they've got 700 things on their menu. So it's like do five things well instead of 700 things crappily. Yeah.
Wait, so you've watched every restaurant repair show ever?
Yes. Yeah. Every single time Gordon Ramsay goes to a restaurant, it's like, why do you have this many freaking things? I went to the Cheesecake Factory and it's like you're flipping through pages like it's Moby Dick. And there's just like this one has spaghetti and then this one has like knockwurst. And it's like, why the fuck do you sell both of those things? You're supposed to sell me cheesecake.
A really expensive cheesecake as well.
Yeah, well, they sell me nothing because it's terrible and I hate them.
It's not even that good a cheesecake.
No, it's definitely not. Yeah. I would much rather just go to Woodman's and buy a whole cheesecake for half the price.
Correct, yeah, for half the price. You could have two full cheesecakes.
I'll get two of the variety packs for the price of a slice at, Spaghetti's R Us in the small there. Look at spaghetti. Yeah, I'll go to Olive Garden. What are you doing, Cheesecake Factory?
I don't like that restaurant at all.
Was that all the Zappity Grumbles?
That's all the Zappity Grumbles.
Wow. I was imagining there'd be much weirder ones.
Well,
our viewership is apparently having an off day because they usually are weirder.
So recommendations.
Yep,
I got one.
You got one? Mm-hmm. All right.
So I thoroughly enjoy playing the game RimWorld. That's on Steam, and they just came out with the 1.1 or 1.0, I think it's 1.1, release and expansion pack for Royalty, which is a shit ton of fun.
So, make sure you download that from Steam and not Pornhub, because RimWorld is a completely different thing.
Yeah, although I enjoy that too.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Not saying, Steam. I mean, I'm not knocking your kink, but, hey.
So it's a roguelike sim game. I don't know if that's a roguelike or not, but it's...
I mean, anything... Roguelike now just means, like, you die, you start over.
Yeah.
Like, that's the term
that's
for
it. Yeah, so it's one of those sims where it's like Prison Architect, where you try to build up through your colony and try to make them survive, and the computer either randomly gives you shit that stomps on your face, or builds a progression that is harder and harder and harder, and it's a lot of fun.
Speaking of Sims and speaking of shit, so Zoo Tycoon is a great game. And a couple of years ago, I'm like, oh, look, I have Zoo Tycoon on my bookshelf. I'm going to play Zoo Tycoon again because that's a fun game. So I start it up. I start playing through the campaign. I get to like the fourth mission. And the mission thing is that you have to have like an average animal happiness of like 96% at the end of 1 year. Not by the end of the year, at the end of the year. That way you can't just have like one happy koala bear and end the game. So I'm playing the thing, and I am crushing it. My zoo is like the eighth wonder of the world. Everybody loves it. Everybody's happy. The animals are dancing like it's a goddamn Disney movie. Then New Year's Eve, all of my zebras simultaneously take giant shits. They fill their enclosure with a metric ton of shit. And so all my custodians are like, oh, I'm going to go clean up the zebra thing. My zebras are like, we hate our exhibit. We're literally neck deep in shit. Bing bong, New Year's Day, Nathan loses. Fuck you, Zoo Tycoon. You are the Cheesecake Factory of Sim games.
So is that an anti-recommendation?
Oh,
is that,
man, is that what fucking you're... shitting zebras. I was so mad, Oz.
Okay, moving along. So I have said before I have the Xbox Game Pass for PC, which I actually like. I actually really like because I can just look at the list and say, oh, hey, this is an interesting game and play it. And on this podcast, we like indie games and we like roguelikes. Mm-hmm. So one of the games that I picked up off of that recently is Wizard of Legend. And it is really, really good. And you should play it.
What is it?
It is
2D, 3D.
It is an overhead 2D action. It is vaguely Diablo-ish, yeah, and it is a roguelike where it is a roguelite because as you go, you can unlock new things that either show up in the dungeon or you can pick a set of spells and one relic to start with, and your robe because your robe matters as well, and as you optimize your build that way. I mean, most of the progression during each run depends on the randomness in the dungeon and how well you kill stuff. But it is a...
it's a very like Nuclear Throne or Enter the Gungeon style. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fast-paced, it's difficult, and it's a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. I got skipped, but I'll come back to me, and I'll recommend something that I know Andy will agree with at the very least. I think everybody likes this game because it's amazing. But coming up in a couple weeks is Doom Eternal. And if you haven't by yet, you should play. And even if you have played, you should play again because Doom Eternal is coming out soon. Doom 2016. Mm-hmm. Doom 2016 is one of the absolute most fun experiences you will have. It is a masterpiece in good game design. It's an absolute blast. It's fun to play. It's fast-paced. Stuff like the way that health works, like the glory kill system. So melee finishing an enemy gets health to appear, and so it encourages that up close. Like, that's the kind of – I appreciate when designers think of things like that. Like, what do we want our player to do? How can we naturally encourage it as opposed to forcing it to happen? It's so fun. There's lots of Easter eggs. You can find old, the 1996 version of Doom levels hidden in things. Mm-hmm. The soundtrack is amazing. The fluff is amazing. It is an absolute blast, and you should either play it for the first time or replay it before Doom Eternal comes out.
Also, check out
Isabelle and Doomslayer being best friends.
No.
Those memes are the best.
No, but there's the guy who did the soundtrack for it. He has his own like TED Talk ish that he did to a bunch of different sound engineers, and he's going over like how he came up with the sound thing. It's like it's like a guitar noise or just like beeps that are going into one mixer into another mixer to another mixer and then relayed back and forth, and
He did is crazy. Like,
yeah.
Like, even like obvious stuff like having chainsaw noises melded into the guitars, but stuff like if you take the spectrogram of the sound and display it, it has like pictures and symbols and demon faces and stuff that you can see because Doom has that stuff in it. Cool. And so it's really neat that he took the time to do that. Who cares? Like, why would you care? But he's like, this will be cool. I'm going to put this in there.
He did it as a joke. He's like, I'm going to go ahead and put 666 into this. And like literally maybe like
people
3 days later,
stuff.
People found him.
Oh, because
in the music already.
Some people have the ear for that kind of thing where they're like, oh, I
can't. It's silent. It's silent.
It's discernible. Yeah. Somebody has to run it through a.
Oh, geez.
Somebody who is still
the one person who actually registered their copy of Winamp, and so it had the spectrograph displayer.
But yeah, no, that whole talk, it's like a TED talk. It's like about an hour long. It is amazing hearing how they came up with the sounds and how it's just. It's a natural thing in the game. It lives by what you do in the game.
As my headcanon is, you know, when you're playing a game and you get to the boss and boss music starts playing, my headcanon is twofold. One, the music that's playing all the time is the boss music, but it's for the demons, not for you.
Sure.
And number two, it's entirely diegetic. In that universe, that music is blaring from the Doomslayer's armor at all times.
Sure. Sure. But like to your point, Andy, a good, like, it's like food. If you think about that, the good aroma of a food makes the taste of it better and the sight of it better. That same sort of thing exists in that game at that point for the music, is that it immerses you in the world so deeply. And honestly, you can look at the same thing with a whole lot of stuff, because in my brain, it's like you look at any of the Private Press's games, and you look at any of the stuff where you're like, this faction sings to me because it's this aesthetic or this feature or whatever. It's like it grasps you and pulls you in and holds you.
Technically, War Machine or Warcast or whatever, like if this base just said Juggernaut and had a stat line on it, it would have zero effect on how you play the game of War Machine. Correct. Literally none of the models are necessary for the gameplay aspect of War Machine, but that aesthetic flavors and it bleeds over. They're not entirely separate from each other.
And that's to that point, like why Warcaster is real good for 3D terrain, because it's that table.
Yeah, it feels alive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's,
well, 3D terrain is good for miniatures games in general.
Yes.
Yeah, especially if you have a hill that you want your nicely painted model to tip over and break on. That's why hills
Aurora,
are gone.
Which is why Aurora and Nemo took them to the future.
Yes, thank you, Aurora and Nemo. I got tired of having my model half on a hill with two dice propped up under the other side of the model.
We still have to worry about tables not being level between.
Oh, that's not as bad. Like when people had the hills that were like it was a 45 degree angle, like, and so like a jack couldn't balance on it.
Sure.
So you had to like prop them up. It was just a nightmare.
You haven't been to the conventions I've had to be in where the tables are not level and there's like a 4-inch gap between tables.
4-foot gap.
At ATC, we've dealt with that.
I know we have.
We've been shoving silverware under tables to lift up the leg. They're like, hey, where's all the silverware from the buffet?
No, I don't know,
but these tables sure are flatter now.
Did I recommend Blasphemous?
No.
Yet?
No.
I don't think you recommend not today, but I don't know that he has even in passing.
I was saying not today.
So Blasphemous is a Metroidvania.
Are we all doing video games today? I guess it depends what Oz does, but so far we're 4-for-4 video games.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. But it's a Metroidvania platformer. It is a very old New Testament style game. It's what I'd like to call Catholicvania.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you were telling me about this. Yeah.
Catholicvania. Yeah. I like it.
It's just a very solid, in-depth Metroidvania game. It's kind of hard to really explain other than just get it. It's Blasphemous. It's fun.
Yeah, the art aesthetic is very, very dark and interesting. Like almost like, if you think like things like Diablo 1 that had that really dark aesthetic that we kind of don't see as much anymore, Blasphemous has that
Darkest
to
Dungeon,
it.
That kind of...
Not the same art style, but that style. Feel.
The whole feeling
feel
is,
of it,
is
definitely.
Basically
the art
like,
style is different. But
everything is in pain. Yeah, everything is all about suffering.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to get rid of your guilt and everything.
Guilt
it's,
being
it's,
a game mechanic. Is,
yeah, it's... It's a very good, solid Metroidvania-style game. It came out, within the last year. In the fall. So, yeah. I mean, it's
pretty still new.
Yeah. It's a really good game. I'm on the final boss right now. I haven't destroyed my controller yet, but I'm about to. But it's honestly not that hard. So, but it has some elements of, I think, Dark Souls as well. So you get to... like little shrines that you can pray at, and it spawns all the monsters up again, but
then
you get
saved,
all your health back.
Yep.
So yeah, it's gory, gruesome, and entertaining.
It's 2D side scrolly Dark Souls with Catholic guilt. draped on top.
Oh. Catholicvania.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Okay, since you guys all did video games, I'm going to do Netflix.
Nope.
If you haven't watched the new series, I Am Not Okay With This, you should watch it. It's very, very short. The episodes are only 24 minutes long. I think there's only 7 of them. There might be 8. It's got a couple of the kids from It in it. It's got a supernatural high school drama kind of thing going on. The story's told in a nonlinear fashion, which I'm a big fan of. And it's really, really good.
So I saw an ad for that on Facebook. I saw an ad for that on Facebook ads. And the ad said, like, I am not okay with this now streaming on Netflix. And the people in the chat were all very confused because they thought that was a statement of the ad was not okay with the concept of the show. So they're all like, A, why aren't you okay with your show streaming? B, what's the name of your show? And I'm not sure how many of those people were joking and how many were just a sign that humanity's doomed.
It's like the same crew that was trying to get Good Omens taken off of Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Because of religious values and that.
Yeah. And Netflix promised that they would not have Good Omens anymore.
Correct. Because Good Omens is streaming.
That's what I would say.
On Amazon.
Yeah, I'll second that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, so I'll add that to my list of shows.
I watched it, I found it on the Friday or whatever that it got posted, and I watched all of it in one night. It's only a couple hours long, effectively.
I still don't have Netflix, so. I'm one of those people. Exactly.
You should probably have Netflix. It's worth it. Yeah. I mean, that's a fair counterpoint.
I paint models and I watch streams.
Like, you could have Netflix on as you paint models, too.
I just watch Moon Moon run through Doom and other games. So.
Fair.
And I normally stream my own stuff.
I just put on Pluto TV. Because, in honest, like Netflix, the number one show on Netflix is turning it on, browsing through the menu for 15 minutes, and then turning it off.
15 minutes. Oh, that's like Little League.
I'm happy that they're turning off you can turn off the auto play previews.
How do you do that?
Because you can't yet, but they said that they're instituting the option to turn that off because I just want to read your goddamn description. I don't need you to start playing noise.
Yeah.
And so I do this dance where I'll read a sentence, then flip to the next show, then back to read the next sentence, and then flip to the next show and back. And it's like this press your luck thing to see how long I can read before the music's going to start. It's annoying, Travis, and I'm not alone. Enough people are annoyed by it that Netflix is instituting an actual setting to turn it off.
Sure, but it should just be off by default then.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Like, good requirements and good testing would prevent this.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Like, that's my job.
But counterpoint, Netflix doesn't care about your enjoyment. They care about your
money.
Engagement. Right? Yeah. And so they'd rather you annoyingly watch a show than be happy not watching a show.
But you might like it.
They don't care if you like it. They care if you watch it. They do not care if you like it.
No,
they don't even care if you watch it. They just care as long
if
as
it
you,
plays.
They just care. No, they don't. Yeah. They just care as long as you pay the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's it?
Yep.
So one last reminder, if you haven't been to the Warcaster Kickstarter, go to Kickstarter.com and look up Warcaster, or go to Warcaster.com and follow all the pretty links.
Yes, and I don't know if as you probably know, Chappie, but I have right here 12 days to go. 12 days to go.
12 days, and on my phone right now, it's at $299,587.
I was going to ask if we hit $300.
There are $413 to go.
Yeah. So we're really, really close to $300,000.
So, Oz, do you think it's possible for demo set to come to Adepticon?
I have no idea.
Damn it. I knew you weren't the person to ask, but I had to try.
So part of the weirdness of that entire situation is the models we played with on the stream were studio models.
Oh, God.
I think we're going to play again on Tuesday, and we're probably going to play with studio models again. And we're going to play with a few of the Get Your Paint On models and that kind of stuff thrown in, too, to play more of a full skirmish game, I think. But yeah, we're a lot of what we have right now are still studio models because production is starting to crank up, and like they sent out all those copies to influencers and stuff. But that doesn't necessarily have gotten to the point where we can paint a bunch to do other things with in the building. So no promises of any kind of whether you're going to be able to do demos or anything else like that at Adepticon for Warcaster.
Okay.
But you will be able to buy the alt sculpt Coalition Weaver, the Marcher Worlds Weaver, the one with no helmet. Mm-hmm. That model will be there.
Cool. Right here.
Sweet.
It's gorgeous.
Awesome. Sweet. Well,
mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Oz, yep. for being on. We appreciate you spending this time to share this little thing we call life.
Yeah.
What? Don't look at me like that.
Private Press is
Can
life.
I have a Jerry Springer moment every once in a while?
No, Private Press is life.
I'd appreciate no Jerry Springer moments happening in the basement here.
You guys can throw chairs if you want.
No. Just his final thought where he tried to pretend like the first 59 minutes of his show were an utter trash and he tries to redeem it with 60 seconds of talking like Gandhi.
Fair enough.
Gandhi wasn't a good person. You told me this earlier.
Yeah, but he talked like he was.
Okay. Civilization, he just tries to nuke me all the time.
My favorite mathematical coding error of all time.
is the hyper-aggressive Gandhi.
Yeah, they put him at zero aggression, and the democracy gives you minus one aggression, so it looped around to 255 aggression on a scale of 0 to 10.
What?
That's what happened in Civ 1. Yep. They're like, we want Gandhi to be peaceful, so he's a zero, and then he gets democracy and goes to 255 on a scale to 10. And they've kept it in every sequel because now it's just a tradition that Gandhi is the most aggressive person in Civ.
Mm-hmm. It's testing. It bothers me.
Yeah.
Rollovers are testing.
Travis, life isn't perfect.
No, life has to be tested.
Yeah. What?
Bloost.
I think that's
the unexamined life is not worth living.
Yeah.
Right, thanks, Travis. Thanks, Oz, for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, everyone, for listening. Go share that gosh darned tweet. I want my unlock.
I posted it as Crippled System.
Yeah.
And back the Kickstarter because we want more models.
Yep.
And it's a fun game. You should want to play it.
The game's amazing.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Everybody.
Bye.
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 Yep. We're still your eyes. We're not broadcasting now.
I know.
All right. Now you can tell us all the secrets, like when the robot faction comes out.
The magic behind streaming.